Next item on the agenda is Rappahannock Oyster Company, number 17-1881. Mr. Stagg.
Commissioner.
I'm sorry. Mr. Ballard, order please.
Due to a request by James Lang, counsel for Patricia R. Perkinson Family Trust, I will be recusing myself from the agenda item. While I don't believe I have a conflict of interest, I have not had ample time to seek an official opinion since receiving this request.
So noted, sir. Thank you.
A couple of housekeeping items. That one was taken care of for me, so I don't have to mention that. We did get one additional letter related to this project that came in after your packet was put together from Scenic Virginia. So I'm going to pass out a copy of that. I thought the last project wouldn't take very long, but I can guarantee you this one will take longer. So this is an application from Rappahannock Oyster Company to a request under a joint permit application process to place up to 34,560 SEPA aquaculture baskets, and I'll explain what those are as we get through the evaluation. Suspended between 8,928 composite poles with 84,521 feet of linear feet of monofilament line. This would be placed over the applicant's existing oyster ground lease, which is in the Rappahannock River near Lockleys Creek in Middlesex County. The applicant's also requesting two other alternative methods. I'm not going to read all that. I will get into some more detail of those later in the evaluation. But they're a modification of the deeper basket and then a secondary different type of system called Oyster Grow floats. And we'll discuss those. The project is protested by quite a number of local residents, which I think are here today, a lot of them, probably more than the protest letters I got. Those letters are in your packet, and there's a list of the people as well. So this project is located, as I said, in Middlesex County. This is a pretty wide view of that, but the little dot there is the location. We'll zoom in a little closer, and this is Lockleys Creek, ridge going across the Rappahannock. This is a footprint of the actual oyster ground lease that Rappahannock has. And these squares you see inside are the proposed areas of the project. This is a little closer view of the project drawing they provided. The project is proposed to be done in three phases. Phase one would be only this one rectangle you see here. Then this larger completion of this bigger rectangle would be phase two, and then phase three would be this area here. Again, it is protested by a number of residents, including the property owner that owns this series of islands, and a number of local residents. Rappahannock Oyster Company has a facility in Lockleys Creek where they do process their oysters. They also have a marina there and a tasting room facility. Colloquially, it's known as the old Lockleys Marina site. So this is in close proximity to that location. So in October of 2017, we did receive the application. We did subject it to our normal public interest review. Much of this area does have submerged aquatic vegetation, which we'll discuss in more detail further in the evaluation. During the public interest review process, we did receive a number of objections from nearby highland property owners, and now we're going to go into exactly what they're proposing to do. So this is a SEPA basket, and this would be clipped to a monofilament line. That's what these clips are for. SEPA, as far as I can tell in researching it, doesn't stand for anything except it's a company in Australia. These baskets are also made in the United States. They look slightly different, but these baskets have been around for a couple of decades now in different variations. So I said they were going to do two alternatives, so I want to discuss those first before we get into the main method they really would like to use. This is the first alternative. So this would be using rebar racks. So what you see here are a series of rebars with SEPA baskets attached, again, with the clips. These would be put in rows. And the moisture bags would rest in these baskets. They put bags in, and the racks would be put on number 5 rebar. Each rebar would be 10 feet long, and these would have legs on them that would sink into the substrate to secure the structures. Each rack would hold 8 baskets, and then the interlocking clips would keep them in place, hopefully during even rough weather conditions. They'd be positioned end-to-end in parallel lines, and each line would be about 300 feet, each consisting of 30 racks with 240 baskets. They'd space them 12 feet apart with some additional 80 to 100-foot center channels to allow better access through the structures for navigation. Option 2 is the Oyster Grow float system, which is a patented float system. This is a graphic example of what they would look like, the structures themselves, and what they look like when they're deployed. In this particular alternative, the cages would be 6 feet by 4 feet, and it holds 6 grout bags inside the cage. They'd be tethered on a long line, anchored by an anchor, and they'd be 200 feet each, supporting 15 floating cages spaced approximately 6 feet apart. They would use a xylene line to prevent fraying and loss of the equipment. Now, to get to the main proposal that they're requesting. So, again, they would use the same SEPA basket that I showed you a moment ago. And this is how the array would look. It'd be large piling-type poles driven at the end to secure the line. And then they're proposing 2-inch intermediary poles to secure the line up and down each line. They'd be in rows like this with some alleyways in between. So in phase one, they're proposing just a 0.83-acre area, that first rectangle I showed you, and it would consist of 2,880 baskets, 744 poles, and all the associated line and clips and anchors. Phase two would be about 7.42 acres if approved, and then phase three would be another 3.87 acres. While the applicant did indicate in their request that the total area for all three phases was about 10 acres, when we plotted the actual coordinates they provided to us, it comes out to more like 12 acres. Again, this is an artist rendition from the SEPA company of what these look like when deployed. Again, you see the spacer poles, the SEPA baskets, and these are the clip hangers. So these are designed so that they can be hung along these lines underwater or at the water surface. You can put these up at the surface to help defoul them naturally by letting the top of the basket be exposed and dry out any fouling material, which will then wash off. This prevents the necessity to have to clean the cages with power washing and that type of apparatus. And that's one of the proposed benefits of the SEPA basket. Again, this is an artist's rendition of what these, when deployed, typically look like. Each one of these would be a monofilament line with SEPA baskets attached, and this is what Rappahannock River is proposing. Each SEPA basket is 8 inches by 6 inches by 24 inches, and they are fastened to a taut and perfectly straight line of monofilament. The poles that Rappahannock is proposing, the intermediary poles, would be 2-inch recycled composite material, and they would use 11-millimeter monofilament line. Each structure would have 4 composite 5-inch strainer posts to help support the lines at the end. That's the bigger post you saw in the drawing. And the baskets are proposed to be suspended approximately 2 feet off the bottom. The applicant also proposes to mark the area in accordance with VMRC marking regulations. Those are the regulations that are in our marking regulation for active work areas for forest ground leasing. The application indicates a total area of 9.96 acres. Again, as I mentioned, we believe that all three phases are slightly larger than that. We would like to note that a couple of the phases, the offshore corner is within 2.5 feet and about 4 feet of an adjacent lease. So it would come very close to adjacent leaseholder. but that leaseholder has not provided any objection. So this, to orient you again, this is the actual plat. That series of islands sort of that we were looking at is in here. They're not defined real well in this shoreline drawing, but this is the lease. This is our aerial photography with the leases overlain, and this is my attempt to pinpoint pretty close the coordinates they gave us on the map. So this would be all of phase two. Phase one would be a subset right here, and phase three would be here. Again, Lockley's Marina is here. The series of islands is an adjacent property owner. I believe this is protested by a number of people in Lockley's Creek and to the north and west along this shoreline all the way to the bridge and perhaps others. This is another island from which we got a protest from the owners. These islands and these islands are both used for hunting purposes, and I'll discuss that a little more directly, particularly for this island, further in the evaluation. So I've turned this now so it's oriented like the plat. It's not oriented north like the previous photos, but that's the same drawing you saw previously, and I've turned it that way just for orientation purposes to match the plat, because that is facing the way the plat's oriented. The use of cages, floats, and nets for shellfish propagation has resulted in increased public awareness of the leasing of both bottomlands and has highlighted the necessity for a more comprehensive review of both lease application requests and new methods of shellfish aquaculture propagation. Such requests in populated areas raise new issues regarding public trust lands to include user conflicts, property values, aesthetics, navigation impacts, and suitable bottom types. Stewardship of public lands, while weighing the public and private benefits versus those the detriments, requires a more proactive approach to the review of shellfish lease application requests and permit requests. Review of aquaculture apparatus within a water column and or on the water surface presents an additional challenge beyond the previous methods used for shellfish cultivation within the Commonwealth. This agency has a long history of reviewing oyster planting ground leases to include adopting regulations that allow for on-bottom cage aquaculture on leases. With the increased interest in using both the water column and the surface of the water for shellfish propagation, in addition to bottom culture methods, new user conflicts have arisen. Additionally, while the agency has a policy of avoiding impacts for leases in areas of SAV, floating aquaculture presents a new challenge related to the impacts of this important natural resource. The Commission recently adopted a policy to specifically address the SAV issue related to both oyster planting ground leasing and subaqueous bottom encroachment permits. This policy does contemplate the possibility for such permits to be issued over SAV beds. While avoidance of those beds is still the preferred, in certain circumstances, permits could be issued over such beds with proper mitigation and or compensation for any impacts associated with the permitted apparatus and its use. In light of that, we requested the Virginia Institute of Marine Science, our scientific advisors, to review this project and provide us with comments. And they did so. They're included in your assessment, and they do note that while the request may have a suite of social-based conflicts, their comments are really limited to the resource conflict issues. That report notes that the entirety of the proposal contains a relatively large and dense area of submerged aquatic vegetation, comprised primarily of widgeon grass. It further states that the potential adverse impacts of suspended floating oyster aquaculture could include, one, reducing growth from shading of the SAV, two, over-enrichment of the bottom sediments due to biodeposition, and three, direct damage to the SAV beds from farming activities, which could include the installation of the poles and trampling of the SAV if the baskets were worked by getting out of the boat and walking the area. The use of best management practices could minimize such effects if properly designed and adhered to. Spacing could also be used to minimize shading effects, and proper siting and density could help avoid any excess accumulation of organic matter on the bottomlands. VIMS, however, states that such BMPs have not yet been developed. They add that the lease is already being used for on-bottom cage aquaculture, and you can see that in this photo. These darker streaks you see here are actual cages that Rappahannock Oyster has on the lease already, which is allowed under the regulations we have up to 12 inches. We typically don't allow them on SAV, and there is SAV in this lease. However, this lease, while not real old, when it was leased, there was virtually no SAV on it, which is why we leased it. It has populated since Rappahannock Oysters started leasing it, and our pursuant to that same SAV policy that the commission adopted, our policy is when it populates into a lease and cages are already on the lease, we let the leaseholder keep the current leases, cages, but we don't allow them to add any additional new cages. So they'd be allowed to continue to work these cages that they have, but we would advise them not to place any new cages. And I've had that discussion with Rappahannock Oyster about this particular lease. So now we're talking about floating aquaculture, which is addressed also in the policy, which we could permit, but it depends on the impacts. VIMS goes on to add that the lease is already being used for bottom cages and that the new proposal could take place of those cages or expand upon the use of the lease. They do acknowledge that the applicant has agreed to work the devices from boats to avoid damage to the existing SAV beds and that fouling control could be obtained with this type of system through intertidal exposure. This elimination of the need for power washing and or scrubbing of the apparatus would help with the biodeposition problem. VIMS notes that due to the scale of the entire request, they lack any data on how placing up to 34,000 such baskets will affect the light availability over the existing beds. They do recognize that this system will allow a greater light generation underneath than the oyster grow type float, which I showed previously, which was the second alternative, which the applicant has also proposed. VIMS did not provide specific recommendations on the other two alternative methods proposed by the applicant, but based on previous conversations with VIMS, staff believes both those other alternative methods would likely create even more impacts to the SAV. They would do more shading and be more difficult to work in the project area than the SEPA basket, which is the primary method that Rappahannock Oyster has requested. The placement of 8,928 poles, if deployed, would affect the SAV directly for the footprint of the pole, obviously. But VIMS also states that the creation of that many poles could create a trapping mechanism that could trap benthic algae and could bury or shade the SAV further. VIMS goes on to state that the knowledge about potential effects on SAV health from these types of apparatus could be positive, could be negative, or could have no effect. But unfortunately, the current state of knowledge is not sufficient to provide an assessment for this project. They add that there has been significant investment in public funds in SAV recovery over the past three decades, and that recent data shows significant progress in recovery. Therefore, until there is a larger understanding of how to minimize the effects, they urge the caution in allowing any type of activity like this over SAV areas. They recommend that, if possible, the applicants consider here moving their operation further offshore into deeper water with less or no SAV or to a completely alternative location. They note that should VMRC choose to permit all or a portion of the project, that they recommend the development and implementation of an improved monitoring plan to identify any negative impacts on SAV health by the system and an adaptive management plan for reducing any such observed impacts. Should such monitoring and adaptive plans be implemented, VIMS is prepared to assist in development and or review of such plans. So let's discuss a little bit the SAV issue. So this is a composite map from VIMS. So what's shown here is a little busy, and I'll try to explain it to you. Again, this is the lease. So generally speaking, we're talking about this area right here as all the phases. And this is what's shown in color is the 2017 SAV density. I also have this layer turned on, 2011 to 2015. So that's just the line. And I'll go to the next slide where that'll be a little clearer and a little bit closer view. So again, we're talking about this area. You can clearly see SAV. All this dark area you see is submerged aquatic vegetation. So again, what you just looked at was the 2017 and the composite. Well, I turned the shading off here. So you can see that this area represents that composite of years, and then this area represents just 17. 16 is missing here, but it basically follows the same footprint as the 17 data. So there has been SAV out even all the way out to here historically in the last 5 to 6 years, and that's the criteria we're currently using for both leasing and permitting. So as you can see, there's, if you go back to the previous slide, this is pretty dense. The colors are density. This is less dense, but this is considerably dense. So the only area where there's the least amount of SAV on this lease is right in this northeast corner of this section of the lease.
Commissioner Bowman.
I'm sorry, yes, ma'am.
I know we wait for questions typically, but
proceed.
Could I ask, okay, going back to that last slide, mm-hmm. Your point to the tan color is less dense. Is that, when you say less dense, is that what percentage or is there?
Bims might have to help me. I think this is 40%.
Yeah. That'd be Dr. Bob Orth of Bims who said it's 40% coverage.
This is the lesson.
Time out. Ms. Everett.
So up to 40% is that pale area?
Present.
We're going to hear from Vims okay. directly after Mr. Okay. Stagg as well.
Questions from Vims.
But no, if anybody does have a question, please bring it up.
Right. All right, so I'm going to leave SAV for now and go to the protestants. This, of course, project has, you're aware by the people in the room, has generated a number of protests from nearby property owners. The property owner immediately adjacent to the proposal owns a series of islands that are used for recreational and hunting purposes. That owner, Mr. Russ Perkinson, has expressed considerable concerns about the viability of the continued use of these areas for activities due to noise and interference with navigating the shallow waters around the islands, should this application be approved as requested. Mr. Perkinson has applied for any available ground inshore of the Rappahannock lease and within the subtidal areas of the island. So, Mr. Perkinson has applied inshore of the Rappahannock lease and within some of these guts of this island to lease that area for himself, I think as a sort of a protection of the vacant area that is left. But there's not a lot of vacant area between this lease and the island. When we surveyed it relatively close to the island. Now, you need to understand these islands are not occupied. Mr. Perkinson can probably address this. I don't believe they're actually buildable. I don't think you could build a house out there. But they are definitely used for recreational, and I know that he does use it for hunting. I think the concern is when they're hunting, if there's activity out here on the water in a boat, that's a direct interference with trying to hunt because of the noise and other types of fishes. So I think it's a valid concern. The applicant was notified of the protest and for their review and consideration, so hopefully maybe they'll address that today. While the project does impact a rather large area of state-owned subaqueous bottomlands, it would appear that access to and from Lockleash Creek to the south and for properties to the north of the Rappahannock River should not be more than minimally impacted. This is an extremely shallow area we're talking about here. Most of the people, and they may contest this when they get up and speak, but I think most of the people who live to the north of this would not routinely be navigating through here, particularly at low tide, because you can't hardly get through here at low tide. They would be, even if they were going back into Lockleash Creek, they would be coming to the south of where this is proposed, and these people would be coming out to the north. But it would impact, you know, some activity in this area of navigation, like jet skiing and kayaking, because it will encumber, you know, about a 10 to 12 acre area of subaqueous land. Again, the immediately adjacent property might be impacted. during times of harvest or when husbandry activities were occurring, particularly if the hunting activities were occurring at the same time. It also was raised that encumbering this large area would restrict the use of crab pots and could limit fishing in the area, and obviously you wouldn't be able to put crab pots directly where these arrays were placed. Conversely, the addition of oysters into this area could have a positive effect. It could actually attract more fish and more crabs and could be beneficial to other organisms in the area. So I wanted to give you an example of this operation in action, and not in Virginia. About a month ago, I went to the Gulf and South Atlantic States Shellfish Conference in Alabama, and they took us to an active SEPA farm that looks almost exactly like this proposal. So here's the SEPA baskets. This is a pier at the leaseholder's property in Alabama. They were harvesting the day we were there. These were empty baskets. They were bringing them ashore in a large floating tub. Now, this one, they do walk. They walk all their apparatus because it's only about waist-deep water. They bring them to the pier. They take them out. They dump them into a tumbler. These are two tumblers. The Rappahannock Oyster has the same kind of equipment. Tumble out, take out the large oysters for market, repack the SEPA bags with the smaller ones, and send them back out to the line. So this looks a lot like the artist rendition you just saw. This is an actual photograph of a farm in Alabama. So this is exactly what it looks like. Now I'm on the end of the pier, so I'm right at it. It's very close. That's the tub that they use to put the baskets in and walk them back to shore. So this is, generally speaking, sort of what this would look like. I would caveat that the location of this one in the Rappahannock is about 1,400 to 3,000 feet from any house, so it is a good distance away. It would be visible. So as an example, I'm still standing on the same pier, and I have panned around to the south, looking out into the Gulf, and you might be able to see it, but right there is another system, just like the one that I just showed you the picture of. I don't know this distance, but I would guess it's maybe a couple football fields away. This is an uninhabited area in Alabama, so they didn't have any conflict with landowners. It's kind of a marshy, sandy spit where people live. But again, that gives you some idea of what you would see from a distance. So they are visible. We can see that. But you know, from the distances we're talking about, the visibility would be somewhat minimal. And the closer you get to them, of course, you know, the more you see. So therefore, after considering all the factors of the Code of Virginia 28.2-1205 and carefully reviewing the revised proposal of the applicant, the potential for considerable impact to existing SAV beds in this application area, and considering the concerns of the protestants, staff cannot support the proposal as submitted. However, should the Commission consider an approval, we would strongly recommend from staff approving only Phase 1 and that the footprint of Phase 1 be moved to the northeasternmost portion of the applicant's existing lease in the northeasternmost offshore part, which is lease number 19260. So this is Phase 1 as proposed. And this is Phase 1 that, if you deem approving any portion of this, we would recommend just Phase 1 and in this location. That is the least amount of SAV area. It's still relatively shallow. I think the system could be installed there. It's very similar to this, has less SAV. If you do consider approval of any or all of this, we would recommend the following special conditions for Phase 1, and this would apply to Phases 2 and 3, but of course the royalties and things would be different. But our proposal is, while we recommend denial of the entire thing, should you wish to approve Phase 1, this would be the special conditions. We would require a surety bond for Phase 1 in the amount of $5,400 to cover the cost of removal of all 2,880 baskets, posts, lines, augers in the event of a complete failure of the project and if the applicant wouldn't do it. An annual royalty for Phase 1 in the amount of $180.77 based on the bowl outline of 36,000 155 square feet at half a cent per square foot. If any additional phases are obviously approved, the royalty would be a half a cent per square foot for the bold outline. Permit will not be issued without proof of the surety bond. The permit and authorization to retain the structures would be valid for 5 years, and after the 5 years, the commission would have may request to reevaluate the project and seek authorization. The applicant could seek authorization to continue the project for an additional period of time. That the public shall not be excluded from any area not physically occupied by the actual structures themselves. That they maintain all structures and remove any within 5 days upon falling into disrepair or upon cessation of the use of the structures. That they be marked in accordance with 28.2607 of the code related to orchard ground lease marking and the VMRC marking regulation. Should unforeseen conflicts arise, the commission may elect to hold an additional public hearing at any time. They may elect to revoke the permit or direct removal of any or all of the authorized floats. And that all commercial activities conducted in association with the structures shall be in accordance with both relevant VMRC and health department regulations. The permittee shall also be required to remove or relocate any of the structures which are determined to be in the way of any approved shoreline project requested by adjacent highland property owner within their riparian area. And number 11, which goes back to the VIMS report, should you deem permitting any of this project, the permittee should provide a monitoring plan designed to identify any negative impacts on SAV health. That plan should incorporate an adaptive management strategy for action to reduce any such observed negative impacts, and that these plans be approved by staff before the installation of any aquaculture apparatus can occur. I would be happy to try to answer any questions. I'm sure that the applicant is here. A lot of people in objection are here as well.
Any questions of Mr. Stagg? Ms. Everett.
Mr. Bowman, I have a few questions. Should I roll them off or one by one?
One by one, please.
Okay. So, Mr. Stagg, what we're looking at now, obviously that's a SEPA bag configuration in the grid shape in yellow. Phase one is relative scale in the black box.
Well, this is what Rappahannock's asking for is phase one, just this box right here. This is what staff, if you were going to approve any of it, we would say move phase one from this location, this rectangle, to this location. And the rest of this is phase two, the rest of this rectangle, and this is phase three.
Yes, ma'am, proceed.
Where is current on bottom aquaculture right now, and would that persist if the SEPA bag is not proposed?
What they plan to do if this is approved with their existing, but these darker lines you see, and the applicant can correct me if wrong, but we believe those to be arrays of cages on the bottom. Anywhere you see it, these darker lines, not these lines because they're the drawing, but these lines, and over here as well.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, great. And then that black box that you all proposed moving, that's the 40% coverage, that pale area that we saw in the front.
That's less there. That's in that. Let me go back to that slide. So that would be right in this area right here. So that's the less dense coverage. This is the 40, and this is less. So we're proposing it kind of, it would straddle some of the 2017 area. And this is historic last 5 years, so we could clip some of that too. So if approved and if they provide the monitoring plan, this would give us an area that we could sort of see what the impact is. But there is SAV here, it's just not as dense. If you want to see what the impact is to a really dense bed, I guess you could leave phase one where it is. I think the landowner here doesn't really want those as close to the land as that either, because of the hunting thing. This would be a little better for that purpose because it would be further off.
Yes, ma'am.
Two more.
Got all day.
That's dangerous. I guess two questions really. So your comment about FIMS policy being sorry, VMRC policy being kind of no new cages in area where there's been SAV coverage. This kind of changes that condition, well, or policy, or is it different because these are off bottom, or?
It's a two-phase policy. So for leases, the policy contemplates that if you have a lease and it has SAV on it, do not put cages on where the SAV is. If you have a lease and you have cages, and then SAV populates into the area after you've placed cages, then we would let you keep your current array of cages, but do not add any new cages. And I understand that's a nightmare for enforcement for us, but that's the policy. You know, how do we know when they harvest one that they put it back in the same place? Well, we probably don't for sure, but that's the policy. For a project like this that requires a permit, not a lease, I mean, they could have applied for this had they had no lease here. This was just vacant bottom. This would be a valid joint permit application for a use of state-owned land. We would say there's a lot of SAV here under the policy. Staff's perspective and from the polishers, we should avoid it. We should avoid permitting here. But the policy does go on to say there may be circumstances where some type of permit for some type of activity might be allowed, provided that there's either mitigation or compensation for the impact. So had they applied here and said, we know we're going to impact SAV, we're agreeing to compensate somewhere else, we would have evaluated that with VIMS's assistance and decided whether we thought that was appropriate.
And then it would have been up to this commission to decide.
And our recommendation, should you approve any of this, is that they really should have a monitoring plan so we can determine what the impact is, and they should have a management strategy of what they're going to do if it does, that we approve in advance, so that if there is an adverse impact, they already have a management strategy of what they're going to do to either mitigate it or compensate for it. So that could be part of the plan. It could have a mitigation compensation factor built into it both, saying if we adversely impact SAV here, we will plant more somewhere else, pre-approved, or if we impact it, the mitigation is we'll just remove it. We'll remove it. And I don't want to write the plan for them, but I think, and Vims can probably address that better than me, but that's, I think, what I'm thinking on. And that's what our current policy is, that the commission adopted.
Further question? Mr. Minor.
Is this project caused any pollution or debris, or, and is this an unindustrialized area as well?
Well, this is primarily residential inshore of this. There's Lockledge Marina, which you would characterize, I guess, as commercial because it's a marina, and it's the operation for Rappahannock Oysters. They actually do their tumbling. So they have part of it that's a marina, part of it has some structure out of the water to do some of this other activity. And they have a tasting room there. They have a little, you know, semi-restaurant tasting room. Mm-hmm. But the rest of the area is pretty primarily residential. And then this area of these islands is just sort of undeveloped, you know, recreational use type land, is my understanding.
What about debris and pollution?
Well, there's always that factor here when you're talking about putting a lot of apparatus in the water, and the fear with any kind of aquaculture, floats, sepa baskets, is, you know, a storm could dislodge a lot of the stuff, and that's why we require a surety bond, because if something goes wrong here and the applicant's not willing to address it, then we have a surety bond that we could call and then try to take care of the problem. But that's a reactive, I mean, the surety bond is proactive. Actually cleaning it up is reactive once it happens.
Ms. Lusk?
Have you seen many instances where you've required a surety bond and had to use it because the applicant or the leaseholder was unwilling to clean it up?
We routinely require one now. We learned our lesson when we had a series of apparatus at the mouth of Surris Creek, and the applicants sort of abandoned them, and maybe got scattered, and we didn't have a bond, and that was a real problem, because we had a lot of issues with getting that gear out of the water. So
it was a big mess,
but
I recall.
I don't think we've had to actually use the bond on anyone since we've implemented it.
Further questions? Mr. France.
Yes, I guess phase one, I know nothing about this kind of aquaculture, but phase one, I guess you would put the cages out with small oysters.
I think Rappahannock can address that, but yes.
Yeah. And then
the way I understand the way that people are using the SEPA baskets and the way the guy in Alabama is using them is they start with seed orchards. This guy in Alabama was getting ready to put an upweller on land where he's going to actually start from very scratch.
Mm-hmm.
He was buying his seed, and they routinely have to go out and either bring them back to the dock, which is what they usually do, I think, and sort them. And the bigger ones get put in a different basket and put back out. So that array you saw in Alabama is they were moving those routinely from left to right.
Right.
The right was the market ones, and the left was the very baby ones. So they would, as they market them, they just keep putting them back out because they do grow at different rates.
Right. But it's phase one when you start with the small ones, and the applicant can get ready to answer this also. But don't you also, then you're going to need to phase two as they grow out?
Well, I think that's what the applicant's going to tell you is that they, and I don't want to speak for them, but I think
right. That's
the plan here is that for this to be successful, they really need a larger than phase one.
And another concern I have here is that since this is in Rappahannock and we could have a winter like we did this past year, ice could be a major factor in this.
Absolutely.
I mean, that'd be probably worse than a wind event.
That is definitely a concern with this much apparatus in the water.
Mr. Tankard.
You mentioned in your dialogue the Watts Bay operation that Rappahannock River has applied for and gained permission to do on the Eastern Shore.
Yes.
Has there been any activity there? If so, what are the ramifications? How does it look, et cetera?
I'll let Hank answer.
Hang tight, we're going.
But I'll preface it by saying, yes, that was protested, but not like this one.
Correct.
There was not a big SAV issue with that one.
Correct.
And we did permit it. And we permitted, they asked for three alternatives there as well, I believe, the same three, and we approved all three. So they have the option there to use any of these options. Whether they, how much they've deployed, Hank?
Mr. Badger?
Applicants can certainly tell us. They're here.
I'm not aware of any deployment at this time. They have applied for a larger pier, considered a commercial pier that they do want to build, so I'm assuming that they're in the process of getting ready to deploy.
So follow-up. So no activity at Watts Bay at this time?
That I'm aware of, no.
But hold on, and all due respect, let's make sure that we keep the questions focused to this project and don't get too far away. I understand your concern, but...
Mainly my question for the Watts Bay is experience to try to understand.
To that point, what to that point, proceed.
Yeah.
The applicant is here, so I'm sure they can address that.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Tankard.
It is the same basic type of application for the same type of apparatus at Watts Bay that was approved.
Further questions? Mr. Tankard.
Then I have one more. With regard to the 8,928 composite poles, do you understand how they're going to be placed into the bottom?
Well, I would assume the larger ones would have to be driven almost like a piling, but Rappahannock can address that. I don't think they fully address the exact method of how they'd install them.
Mm-hmm.
The two-inch ones, this is a shallow area. I assume it's relatively solid bottom here, but again, I think Rappahannock could address that question directly.
Okay.
To how they actually plan to put these in.
Further questions? Thanks, Ben. Does Vins wish to be heard on this matter? You've been commented or referenced a number of times. If you wish to, fine. It's totally up to you.
I think you've provided comments. Mr. Stagg did a great job of summarizing them, and we are available to respond to questions.
Okay. In that vein, before we go further down the path, does anyone have any questions for members of the Virginia Institute of Marine Science? Ms. Epp, come forward, whoever's going to answer on behalf of VIMS. Be Dr. Mark Luckenbach. Ms. Everett, proceed.
Being organized, I did a few questions looking at the letter. Bear with me for 1 second. So in the comment letter on page 2, you refer to, at this point, you don't know if it's positive, negative, or neither effects on the ecosystem of SAV beds. With that said, how do you propose moving forward or suggesting next steps? I know in the next paragraph you refer to, in this, the recommendation for this application is further offshore to deeper water or an alternative location without SAV. Is that possible, or is there a broader picture here?
I'll try to make this brief, but to answer your question in a bigger picture, this is a topic that we've been observing and thinking about for a year plus, and that is that clearly oyster aquaculture is going to be moving. We are seeing it move into the water column, either floating or suspended. And it truly can have. And there are experiences from various places in the world with various densities and ages of aquaculture that can have localized negative impacts and others that don't. And some that arguably have measurable localized positive impacts. Some of that we measured on the Eastern Shore in cages 25 years ago, increased biodiversity. The question, I think, and specifically with respect to the seagrasses, which was the primary thing we were showing here, is in the discussion we've been having, is the need to work out and develop best management practices that avoid those types of things that can be problems. Too much shading, too much physical disturbance of the beds. Where we think it needs to be done, we need to learn that. Had the discussions over the past many months, which went into last year, with staff at VMRC, that we thought we were going to need to do that, we were going to need to work together with VMRC in terms of the permitting, and it wasn't an experiment that VIMS could do on their own. It was going to need to be industry, because VIMS can't do the farm. So this just came before we'd done all of that, before we planned it, so those statements were made in the context of knowing that we want to gather data at some point about how far you space these, what's too dense, what's the flushing rate. There's clearly some things we think ahead of time would be a farming practice that would be very destructive to SAB, namely walking on the lot, harvesting that. That's why we actually comment that we noted from either the application or some other communications we had through a VMRC that these would be done by boat. So I hope that puts into context where those questions came from, and it independent of this particular application, it remains, I think, a really important thing for us to build our understanding of that, of how we can best use the water column. And now, from the VIMS perspective, we're thinking about the natural resource impact. I have, our comments also say that we've used it out of my window from my office. I see every day a setup from this type of system, much smaller, probably less than a quarter of the size of their phase one. We actually use the system and maintain it. We've used it for the last four years, I think, in maintaining our selective breeding stock. And so we know well how the system operates, good way to grow oysters, but we don't have the data environmentally about density, location. I hope that.
Further questions, Mr. Zadrin.
Would it be beneficial to VIMS to maybe go along with what staff recommends, like moving that block out to the west? SAV and use that as a data collection opportunity?
It could be. We could gather some data from there, and I will tell you the normal course that we would do in something like this is we would plan our experiment really well or plan working with somebody and then write a grant proposal to somewhere to be able to fund that. So I don't know that without thinking or talking specifically about this location, what the scale of the research could be, but I would say yes, it is a place from which, if it went out, we could and would gather some data, limited primarily by our resources at hand.
Further questions, Ms. Everett?
I'm not sure, Commissioner Boone, who this would go to, but I guess to Vim's comment of moving this operation further out, short of deeper water, alternative location, is that something that staff or the applicant has looked at, or VIMS may want to weigh in. I don't know who's the appropriate director. address the.
We don't have information about what would be appropriate location. Or, I mean, there's a lot. You saw there's a lot of leaf spot over here.
I believe that likely was a distillation of the thought process of evaluating how much SAV is based on the expertise of staff. Would that be correct?
So there's not necessarily an alternative location that could be viable
Ben,
for
Mr. Stagg.
So typically when we get a permit, we evaluate it on what they're asking for. Of course, in the middle of this, we got the vendor's report that said the best thing here would be not here, somewhere else, alternative location. Rappahannock and Horseshoe does have other leases in other locations. They have some pending applications as well, some of which have the same issues. They have some SAV on them. And I'll let Rappahannock address, but my guess is this is close to their facility. So this and this is probably a good place to grow oysters. They're growing them in cages here already. So this is, you know, to some degree it's a matter of convenience. This is about as close as you could get. There are other leases in this area that don't have SAV on them that aren't Rappahannock's that, you know, they could partner with, I guess, but we don't get involved in that in the permitting process. So there are alternative locations where the system could be put. It might get protested, though, even here further offshore for the same reasons by residents. But
thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Everett. Further questions? Thanks, gentlemen. Is the applicant present or represented? Come forward. Would you gentlemen do me a favor? Raise your right hand. You solemnly swear the testimony that you give be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God. Can you state your names for the record, please?
My name is Ryan Croxton.
Ryan.
Travis Croxton.
Nice to have you here today.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone.
Well, he starts, I have a couple handouts.
Okay.
You know, we should have brought a charter bus here today. Start to think.
And so I'll back up just a little bit because I'm sure the overriding question is why do we have to do this? Mm-hmm. We've operated since 2001 using cage culture on bottom, and we love cage culture on bottom. We've had great success with it. We love that it's unseen. You can drive over top of our farms and you don't see anything, and that is a wonderful aspect of it. What we've come into in more recent times is we've searched abroad to find new markets, as we're finding markets here in America as well. The level of competition in terms of oyster quality is incredibly high at this point, particularly as you go abroad. And most countries throughout the world are using intertidal culture of some sort where they're getting exposure. This method in particular is used a lot in Australia. It's used a lot in France. France uses a lot of rack systems that are intertidal. These things are much more embedded in their culture, so it's obviously not as much of a social issue as we have here in America because it just really hasn't had an opportunity to grow here. But what it does and why there is a reason to be in the intertidal is not for ease of use, if that's what anyone's thinking, because we're enormous advocates of water quality and of SAVs, and that is what we have always wanted to protect. It's necessary to what we do to have good water quality. We're selling something that depends on that. We need the SAVs to provide oxygen to our animals. So all this stuff is incredibly important for us to create a system that encourages this, not just doesn't hurt it, but actually hopefully propagates it. But the reason that we try and get in the intertidal and why you're seeing more and more push to this and why this is coming up is just because it ends up affecting the shape of the oysters. Oysters, particularly Crustacea virginica, is an intertidal species. So it grows in and out of the water and traditionally, and it would have exposure times. That exposure time actually strengthens the adductor muscle, which makes it stronger so that it can live out of the water longer, which helps with shipping. The sepa-type bags also end up capturing a lot of the energy from the surface currents. So that ends up helping to shape the animal, which gives it a better shuckability, which is a big thing in the marketplace. It also puts it up in the water column where there's better food quality. And it also puts it up in the water column where there's a better chance of oxygenation because of the going in and out of the water. We have poor oxygen at the bottom. We have poor food quality. And so it's for these reasons, for the general health of the animal, that we need to get further up in the column if we want to be able to compete on an international scale. We do in America import 95% of our seafood, so it's incredibly important that we start to think in terms of being an exporter of seafood, as well as being able to grow this internally. And so dealing with aquaculture, dealing with these user issues is something that we have to come to terms with, unfortunately, as a society. Unless we want to continue to buy from outside of the country where health standards are much lower and where user conflict is not really negotiated. It's pretty much implemented. So that's kind of a little bit backdrop as to why we want to do this. We do this with reticence because, again, we love being underwater where no one sees it. We can ride out there, and it looks like it always has. So what we've done is try to create a compromise with this. We're not using this system to grow our oysters out from start to finish. We're just using this as a finished product. So for the last 3 months of the cycle of the oyster's growth, we want to run it through these systems to give it that boost, to give it that shell quality, to give it that adductor strength, and to give it that last boost of energy, and to fatten up the meat. So we don't want to grow this for the entire period. So we want to be largely dependent on our bottom culture in our cages, which we've had success with. Everyone seems to be happy with. And then literally just for the last 3 months, run it through these bags. The nice thing about these bags is that there's been some talk, and I can go through each one of these things specifically, but there's been some talk about the amount of work that goes into them. The idea of these bags is that you put them in there, and for our method, it would be putting them in there and then 3 months later taking them out. They don't require any work because they do sit in the intertidal. They get the fouling burn off, and they get all the food they need. They don't really need any tending. They've already been sorted to about 60 millimeters when we put them in the bags, and they'll be pulling them out about 75, 76 millimeters, which would be market size. In that span, you don't really get a whole lot of variation in growth, so we should have pretty consistent everything coming off and then new stuff going back on. Some of the issues that VIMS brought up, and I've been in conversation with VIMS about this because we consider VIMS a great partner in how we build our farms. The shading aspect, we looked at a number of different intertidal options, one of which is the grow cages, which I think you saw in one of the examples that we put as an alternate. We tried to find something that was providing the least amount of shade. These rows are very narrow, very thin. The baskets are very thin, so they do allow a lot of sunlight penetration between. There's a study which I shared with VIMS. It was done by the University of Auckland, where they did a hanging basket study on grasses, and found that there was virtually no impact to the grasses due to the hanging structures. They said there, and I can submit this if.
Okay, I'll hang it.
Thank you. Auckland, New Zealand, not Oakland, California.
So we don't have that kind of stuff here, and I fully am in support of monitoring and further study and working and partnering with VIMS to make sure that, and that's why we propose this in a phased approach, so that we do this right, so that we don't have impacts, and if we do see negative impacts, we can revise or retreat, whichever way seems most logical. So we chose that particular method for the shading aspect. As far as the over-enrichment, which was talked about, that would be in terms of like oyster density. Currently, our cages hold about 1,200 mature oysters. These are 3x3 cages that sit on the bottom. That's pretty dense. What we're talking about with these SEPA bags is a single bag would hold about 60 oysters. So over the course of this acreage that we're talking about, we have about 3 million oysters in market cages out there. We'd be reducing this to a little less than 2 million oysters with 60 per bag. So it would actually decrease the amount of product and spread it out over the entire area instead of concentrating into 3x3 squares. As far as the physical damages due to the farming techniques, again, the beauty of this system is that you can hang these baskets and then you don't touch them for 3 months and then you pull them back off. So if there were any damage due to walking or hopping out and doing whatever, it would repair itself if it caused any damage for putting the baskets out there in the 3 months that you'd go back to touch them again. Let me see. There's a lot to unpack here, so I'm just going through my notes. As far as trash, these things getting away, obviously we're happy to pay the bond. We understand the bond and its purposes. Also important to know that we don't put floats on these bags, so if the bags do become dislodged, they would go straight to the bottom. And it is very much a commodity for us, so I mean, we don't want these things to get away. It's very much in our interest to make sure that they don't get away. The SEPA systems are actually designed to be able to withstand extreme extreme weather events, namely hurricanes. I think the place that Mr. Stagg went to visit and is the Murder Point. Is that who you went to see? They have a fairly large operation down there, and they have withstood hurricanes with no damage. These things are really designed for that purpose, to be in an open setting and endure these type of storm events. However, since we can predict when these storm events generally come, our solution would be to bring these down to a bottom level where they're not in the flow of things, where they'd be prone. So we would just drop them to the bottom during the weather event. Another weather event, which I think you'd mentioned, was about freezing and ice conditions. This past winter, we do have the Watts Bay property that we have put 2 acres of SEPA out on. We started doing that back in September of last year. So we did get to go through the winter and experience what that would be like. That was a big question for us, is how would the system react in the ice. We did not find any issues with the ice. What we did see was when the ice would, you know, go up and down for tidal events, you would see some of the poles come up a little bit, but not enough. Because the entire system is tied together through monofilament lines, it pretty much solidifies itself so that one thing doesn't tend to go out of sync. It all works to support itself. So we also do reinforce the posts that we put in, the 2-inch posts with a coupling at the bottom, so that they don't come out as easily. I think that also serves to help. So I'm sure there's probably a million questions, and probably easier just to go through and just start fielding some of your questions.
I got a couple notes.
Okay. Sorry.
We're kind of here to talk about two conversations. One is with the protesters to answer, just alleviate some of their concerns. The other is to tell you guys why we need to do this to survive. But in terms of the protester, we talked with as many as would talk with us. We were happy to explain the process, what we're doing. I think it ended up, because we applied in September and it's now into May, it's like most of the issues are a game of telephone, where conversation starts here and ends here. I heard stories that we were applying for a mile of putting this in. It was going to be in front of everyone's house. So we, you know, specifically chose this site because it is the least intrusive that we could find in our grounds and other grounds. The code protects it from visibility from our property on Lockleys, although we'd be happy to see it, but it also all of our neighbors on the Lockley side, as well as over on the Beverly Beach side. If you can actually visibly see it, it would be incredibly faint, as a picture that Mr. Stagg actually presented. And by that, you wouldn't be able to actually tell if it was just a faint dock, which you see all up and down the shoreline, or this system. The other thing we've heard is this the beginning? You know, this one's okay, but is this going to be the start of something else? When you apply for the JPA permit, the DMRC encourages you to apply for everything that you would ever ask. So we won't, if we get approval on this, we wouldn't actually deploy this for all of it for many years. We would start sequentially and develop it as we go. But we have no plans beyond this. This actually covers the capacity that we're interested in for an international market. And we would, beyond this, we would not be coming back saying, hey, I want one here. So this is it. This is the end, in the beginning. The littering we've talked about, that's not going to be an issue. So we presented three scenarios. The SEPA is actually a preference. We put in the other ones, oyster floats, because they've actually been approved in the past, and we need to do something to improve the quality of the product. We'd rather not. We think actually SEPA has proven that it fares better in storms. Like you mentioned, they'll just sink to the bottom if they come unattached. You won't have to pick this out of neighbors' yards. If we ever had to, we have Patrick and Bradley over here who would be in charge of picking out for everyone. But that's not going to happen. The other thing is the surety bond. So we have an economic incentive, if anything happened, to recover that, because, again, we're not putting in the SPAC. We're putting in market-sized animals ready to sell. The baskets are expensive.
we would get those immediately. But they would be just on the bottom of where they are. And worst case, if we got run over by that same charter bus, the surety bond would kick in. But so that won't happen. Navigation, this is incredibly shallow. We work out here. We have to motor out slowly with the engine raised up almost all the way when we farm out there. There's no recreational boats that go by there because they would be grounded. The buoy is about a half mile away, and it doesn't impede any kind of water skiing, anything like that. I'm actually now kind of concerned that there's hunting and kayakers. Those two things don't seem to mix, so that should be something I'll talk about, but because I don't want our guys shot out there, they're working. But there is this is an incredibly shallow piece that no one leverages for recreation other than kayaking, canoeing, maybe fishing or whatever, which that would not be impacted. The biodiversity would actually be increased, as we've actually seen in Watts Bay. And then, yeah, I think that's it. So, I mean, for the folks that are protesting, we didn't just say, hey, we're going to throw in this farm here. This is the maximum we would ever build there. We probably won't even get to that scope. But we chose it because it is the least intrusive area that we could physically put this. And frankly, you know, I believe that Mr. Perkinson is the only one really impacted because he owns the island there. But we've discussed this with him on several occasions. We tried to figure out what can we acquiesce to work it out. One actual benefit of SEPA and one concern that he has is soil erosion, beach erosion. The SEPA system will actually save his island from deteriorating over the next 20 years.
So there was one question about, like, could we find a different site to do this? And I'm sure there are other sites throughout the Chesapeake Bay. I'm not saying that. But in our particular area, to go further out, deeper into water, the system does require a certain amount of depth. If you go too deep, it's you can't really operate just from the pole lengths and bending and whatnot. So of all of the area that we could survey in our particular region, this seemed like the one with the least amount of user conflicts. And unfortunately, as you probably see every day, there really is no place in the Chesapeake Bay where you're not going to have some kind of user conflict. So unfortunately, that's just we're trying to mitigate this as best we can. We're happy to work with folks.
Yeah, and for the record, we actually own property in Beverly Beach as well. So we're over there as well. The other issue for you all is the economic impacts. So when we began aquaculture maybe 15 years ago, it was very new in Virginia. We quickly were able to, several companies, transition from the old method of dredging. And let me know that we could legally, under the BMRC regulations, just put oyster shells on the bottom and call it a day. We don't want to do that. We won't do that. But just to kind of clarify that there are some regulations that need to be addressed and discussed. Because if you want to save SAV, that needs to be addressed. However, when we started, the Chesapeake had one advantage over the half-shell oysters that were in the market at the time from the Northeast primarily and West Coast. It was geographic. We could grow more than they could. They were limited by not a lot of waterfront property. So we were able to grow and flourish, and I think Virginia is leading the East Coast in oyster production. The other benefit that we had was that the Gulf had not yet adopted to aquaculture. With the oil spill and deep water horizon, they're putting in oyster farms now, significantly big farms at a quick pace, and we're going to be left behind if we have existing. We cannot compete with the quality that they're actually producing out of these systems. I was very interested to see that you guys actually toured Murder Point. You'll see their name over menus all over the country. It's a significant competitive issue that we will face especially as we look to go international and increase Virginia oysters, the economy, and our jobs. We need to keep up and stay ahead. So far, Virginia's actually excelled because there have not been a lot of barriers to working the water. And I think, you know, a lot of the user conflict is coming up now because there's been some people that have possibly introduced some things the wrong way. I think a lot of oyster farmers such as ourselves and others that have operated for over a decade or more consistently without negative impacts shouldn't have to take the fall for someone who put in grow floats without your approval, and they, you know, were navigational hazards when they came untied. We need to really just step up our game. I pass you over a letter from Mike Hutt on the Marine Products Board, commenting on what he's seen in their overseas exhibitions. The SEPA, the characteristics that it produces, and as Ryan mentioned, we'll just finish the oysters in these baskets, is what's needed to compete on an international level against the gigas species. And we don't have that. There's no hope for any of us to go over to Asia.
And I'll just add and then hopefully take your questions. That we've tried to, since we started doing this, since we got into doing oysters, we've tried to do this in a way that was as open and transparent, and actually always viewed this as agritourism. We wanted people to see the process because this process, maybe not to everyone, but we view it as a very beautiful process, the way that oysters are grown, and the way that we're trying to do this as respectful stewards. So we intend for this farm, and why we were drawn to SEPA is because it is a very organized and clean and systematic farm that is very uniform. It's a system that doesn't end in loose lines and stray farms and pieces all over the place. It's very structurally sound. And it's something that hopefully in time, as other cultures and other countries have grown to view it, that these look as vineyards would to someone else.
The final thing I'll say is that the SEV issue, we realize it poses a challenge as it's currently written in the regulation. I think a bunch of us need to work with some local delegates to change the wording of that. It's kind of Orwellian in that you know, we've all taken out journalists for 10 years or so, writers, authors, chefs, and we've always spoke about how our oysters, our cages, we've seen the SAV come back since we put these cages on the water. We even joked around 5 years ago because so much of it was coming back that we said at some point, we'll probably actually, things will actually turn a corner and we'll be yelled at because there's too much SAV and we should actually get the oysters out. So don't want to have like a reverse Lorax effect here. The oysters are one of the major reasons that the SAV is coming back. And so if you want to eliminate SAV, you could just ask us to remove our cages and it'll follow suit. So that's my opinion, but I've seen it firsthand. I think if you guys surveyed this 10 years ago, the reason that we got the leases, there wasn't an SAV on the leases. They're directly relational to oyster growth. So, any questions?
Any questions? First, Ms. Lusk.
You mentioned that you were okay with the surety bond. What about the rest of the conditions that are suggested by the staff?
In terms of, like, partnering and oversight? And
How do you feel about those?
I feel great about it.
Yeah, we've offered.
We want the result to be that this does not have negative impact.
And
on the site, currently, the VIMS actually leverages some of our site for some of their animals. And they also approached us about thinking about putting in some SEPA lines so they could actually move their oyster genetic library to the Rappahannock. So we've offered and we'd love to continue offering any capacity. We'll work with them to implement the monitoring system. Because at some point it has to be evaluated or it's just going to have to be ruled out completely. And I don't think any of us want to lose the economic advantages of oyster industry.
Further, Ms. Lusk?
Also, we heard that one of the recommendations is to move phase one from where you've proposed it to be to out further in the corner. How do you feel about that?
I think that's fine. I mean, the diagonal in which it's drawn, I might question that a little bit because it needs to be with the currents. But as far as pulling it out to that to the least SAB density, we're fine with that for sure.
Oh, I will tell you though, anyone knows this knows that we argue a lot. My concern is that we were actually chose this to protect our neighbors' viewscape. Moving it out would actually impact the neighbors more so because it would be easier for the folks at Beverly Beach to see. So that would be my reluctance. And also, I kind of question the density science. I mean, this is widgeon grass. It's not yield grass. It comes and goes. So just a nitpick over the...
One says yes, one says no.
And would it affect your ability to add on later if you move to that one part? I mean, I noticed that everything is sort of in a grid, and then it's kind of
you could corner. Just orient. I mean, we'd have to redraw the grid to orient along those lines, but no, we'd be happy to make that adjustment. And I think the premise of this and why we did this in phases is that we do want to see what the impact is, and we would love a scientific partner in this to verify that this is what we're seeing. I don't think we're going into this without grounding based on the Auckland study, based on the other farms that we've seen. We're not going into this hoping that it doesn't kill grasses. There have been other studies that have proven that it doesn't. And so we have also having a number of years of cage culture experience, knowing that we can operate in partnership with restoration.
Ms. Everett.
Commissioner, this might be for you or staff, I guess. So if phase one, the black box in the corner, was meeting your needs and approved by the commission, what would be the process for the future work? Would Rappahannock have to resubmit the application or revisit the hearing?
That would be your decision as the commission's decision as to whether they approve this in its entirety or they approve staff recommendations. You could
indicate.
Move to approve whatever you want to approve, one way or the other, correct? So, yes. Further questions?
Yeah, okay. And you refer to willing to be a partner with VIMS to evaluate or monitor. I guess the question is was VIMS agreeable to do that, plan to do that? What would, and I know there's a, Mr. Sag referred to a monitoring plan that would be approved in advance, but how could that look just so we have a sense of who is doing the monitoring and how?
We put it in there generically because we're not applying, suggesting that we're the only one to do it. We, as your advisors, we think we should be the ones that evaluate it. As I said when I was up here, we have some discretionary funds to use, but the no VIMS is our research gets done on marginal federal grant dollars. Within the context of the resources that we've got, if you approve some part of it, we'll monitor what we can. Now, Dr. Orts does an annual SAB aerial survey. I think we would all agree that something much more focused than the aerial surveys was needed. So within, we would actually help develop a really robust plan that we'd like to see and then would get done. All of it fits into what I view as a much larger plan that we need to answer this types of questions for you in a lot of places, not just here.
And for the record, we're having discussions about those issues. It's certainly on the front burner.
We can certainly commit our resources to capturing data. However, we can help in that respect.
Great. Ms. Everett?
And this is for the applicant, and I'm not sure if it's relevant, particularly this application, but you had mentioned that you would want to see work with delegates to change guidelines for SAV and oyster leases.
I think what he's saying is that we need to rationalize how we speak about this, because we are in a position now where it is almost creating a culture of a fear and perhaps even dissent against farmers for SAV spread. And I don't think you want to be in that position where you're wanting farmers to not want to see SAVs. I think we need to find a way where we can say that farmers want to see it, we all want to see it, how do we work together and accomplish it versus finding these industrial zones of denuded ground where we farm. I don't think that's the answer. I think we need to find some way to both be able to work together and achieve grasses.
Yep. Mr. Tankard.
So I had the question about the poles and how you're going to sink those 8,000-some poles into the bottom.
So the end posts that hold the taut line will be driven by normal, pile drivers that you would see for a dock. Mm-hmm. The interstitiary poles, the 2-inch poles, are driven by we have a pneumatic hammer drill that just piles each one of them down.
Right.
And they have a coupling on the bottom of them that's drilled into the sides that when it goes in makes it a bit harder for it to come out.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure. Further questions? Thank you, gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen, we've been going at this now for about 2 hours and 10 minutes. We're going to take about a 10-minute break. We'll come back, and we're going to go to lunch regardless by 12:30. I mean, I know it's a lot of people here, but I still have to maintain the logistical flow of what's going on. So we'll take a 10-minute break, come back, and then we'll move along. Okay? Be in recess for 10 minutes.
Good. I think BMRC is in a position, like a rod staff.
We'll have to, sir. If it continues.
Yeah.
Crabs, they do weird things. Mouth crack.
Yeah, again. So by the time we get our information, it's too late almost.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you can take your seat, we'll reconvene the meeting of the Marine Resources Commission. This is a public hearing, and is there anyone else here in support of this project that wishes to be heard? Yes, sir. Come forward. Would you raise your right hand, please? You solemnly swear the testimony you give be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, self you God.
Yes, sir.
State your name, please.
My name is Doug McMinn, owner, one of the owners of the Chesapeake Bay Oyster Company, but also the chairman of the board of directors for Shellfish Growers of Virginia. Just a couple of points. I do think Rappahannock has made a very great effort to find a location. We farm in this same area. Middlesex County is a rural location. There are a lot of us that live close to the water, though. I think they have done a good job of selecting this location for this idea. I am not against SEPA. It is new, and it does answer the questions that Rappahannock has brought up about product quality. The thing I would like to bring up, though, is this idea about the SAV. It has been continuing to come up. This morning I print out some pictures. I'm not even going to bother with that stuff because I'm just here to talk. 2007, this area looked like a desert. If you were to do an aerial view of it, 2015, if you see where our gear is located, you will see grass. I think Ryan Croxton did an excellent job of saying we need to figure out a way to work together. That shellfish aquaculture, that is clams and oysters, that we do right now, promotes grass. The one thing that does not, we hear a lot of folks who are in here telling us we can't use our equipment in certain areas with the grass. Grass does not seem to have a problem with our equipment and where we farm. It is constant. It is coming more and more. I will say on this idea of monitoring, and I'm in Travis's camp, I'd rather see them put it right where the grass is heavy so we can see what actually happens, not this idea of, well, will you guys move one more time? That seems to be the new mantra for y'all, and not for VIMS, is that will you please move to where there's no grass? The idea of what we were doing was to create a better environment. We took the idea of taking these barren sandbars and making them productive. The clammers have been doing that on the eastern shore. We started doing it on the western shore with oysters. And now they are habitats where the grass is growing and continuing to grow. If we were to take just a straight oyster reef and slap it on top of the sandbar, so shell the bottom and go spat on shell, you're not going to have the grass that you're seeing. That winter that you talked about where it was frozen over, we have incredible drone footage where we're harvesting those cages. pull the cage up, it's covered in macro algae. The widgeon grass is dead, gone, but we're still, our three-dimensional gear, our stuff, is still producing habitat and still producing oxygen. You have these systems function as constant filtration units. Vims and Dr. Orth have done a great job of looking at how the grasses come forward. They even mentioned in there that 30 years have been of public funds have been spent to make the grass come back. Well, there's at least 15 years of a lot of private funding that's gone into these operations that have allowed for the grass to come back as well. You don't have to plug in this filter. It's constantly going. Our farm houses up to 10 million oysters out on those acres that we have. They're constantly pumping, except for in those few weeks where it gets cold. And there is a measurable impact. We put in 10 pounds of little seed, and we pull out tens of thousands to hundreds of thousands of pounds of product. We're doing something that can be measured. So I do think this is a good idea, and I want to at least be heard saying that. Thank you very much for your
time. Thank you, Doug. Any questions, Mr. McMahon? Good to see you again.
Thanks.
Amen. Anybody else in support? Yes, sir. Come forward, please. Raise your right hand. Solemn swear testimony you're about to give. Believe the truth, whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
I do, sir.
State your name, please.
Matt Will, Vice President, Sales and Operations for SEPA USA. So I will be brief because I know that there's a great many people who want to speak on this. Just two things I want to make the Commissioner aware of. First up, this is a system we've been developing over the last 20 years. It's been adapted to work around the world, so we have operations in Korea, Japan, Australia, New Zealand, France, Belgium, the Netherlands, Mexico, Canada, the US. So across those different environments, we have developed systems that withstand a wide range of temperatures, wind conditions, tidal flows, and this is there's an adaptability and a ability to retrofit different systems into what Rappahannock's proposing. So it can be modified in the event there are any needs. And the second point is I have spent quite a bit of time with Rappahannock in their 2 acres I've developed on the Eastern Shore. And I can say that the commitment I've had to doing this with the utmost respect for the environment, ensuring it is a system that stays where it should stay and operates as it should, is as good as we've seen just about anywhere in the world. I think that's probably, as Ryan and Travis will tell you, a respect for the amount they've paid for the system. They want to make sure it's in the water where they want it.
Questions to the gentleman? Mr. Tankard.
With regard to ice, the salinity level on this Eastern Shore seaside is much greater than that over on the Bayside. What's your experience with ice, if it's greater than what they saw in Watts Island, which I think will be the case?
So we've had experience with this system in Canada where farmers have adapted it to come out in the event they've got extreme ice events. But I believe it was about 6 inches of ice, which is a significant amount for it to be under.
Further question? Yeah, Mr. Tank.
So what you're saying is that you think that even greater amounts of ice on the Bayside, this system should not have an issue.
I wouldn't say that. There are, of course, limitations. I mean, everything has a breaking strain at some point.
Sure.
What I would say is that where the system has been deployed in very heavy ice environments, such as in PEI in Canada, farmers have adapted systems that allow them to remove them in the event of extreme weather events.
Mm-hmm. Further questions? Thank you for the information, sir.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Anyone else in support of this project? Anyone here in opposition to the project? If you are, please raise your hand. Okay. As I said earlier in the commission meeting, anyone that wishes to be heard will be heard. However, if it's a point that someone has already made, please try not to repeat that point. Please try to be as concise as possible. I'm not going to limit your time, but I ask you to limit your time the best you possibly can. And what I will do is everyone that wishes to testify or possibly will testify will stand at this time. and be sworn. Would you raise your right hand? Do you solemnly swear the testimony that you give before this commission will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God? Thank you. Who was first to speak? State your name for the record, please.
My name is Edward G. Fleet. I live at 3674 Grays Point Road in Middlesex County.
Nice to have you, Mr. Fleet.
Very close to the where the farm is going to be put. Thank you, Mr. Commissioner and Commissioners, for listening to us today. Hearing a few things in here today, it wasn't on my agenda, but I don't know that we had even talked about it. Where I live, there are all the bottom cages in front of my house now. They were put there without me knowing it several years ago. I have probably picked 8 or 12 off of my shoreline that come ashore, and they're usually tumbled up, torn up when they get there. That was one of the things I heard in here today that probably shouldn't happen, but it does. I hear about the BMPs. I farm in Middlesex County, about 2,000 acres. We abide by the Chesapeake Bay Act. We're in the Rappahannock watershed and the Piankatank watershed. All of our fields on the water are bound within, I don't know, half a mile of the river lines and shorelines. We have put setbacks in to deter the fertilizers and things from getting in the water, which has also impacted the growth of grass. And this Rappahannock comes, as you know, all the way from Fredericksburg and on down. So it's not just orchards doing it. Trust me, we've had to abide by these laws quite a bit. The business I've been in, my life, my family, we've had a machinery business for 3 generations selling farm machinery since 1954. We own the Piankatank River Golf Club, which does abide by all of these waterways, and it's on the Piankatank watering it. The signatures here today, you already have people raise their hand, but we also have over 125 signatures that, without even asking, came to us. Just concerned. Another concern that I heard in here today was that wouldn't be very visible, and this is a new operation, a new way to do it in our area. Well, in the state of Virginia and all over the country now, they're putting solar panels in. We have solar farm in our area. It's on about 120 acres, and it has created quite a stir there just for the view of everything in the county. Is it going to change the way Dominion Power, the energy people, is it going to save us money? They're saying maybe, yet nobody really knows, I don't think. So if anything goes through, it's got to be monitored. Yes, definitely we are opposed to what we're seeing there, just already by what the cages come to shore. And I have witnessed, I've lived in the home for 11 years where I live now, and I have witnessed no less than 12 boats. One guy was on the jet ski one day with the bottom cages now. Tangled up in that, threw one guy off. I went out and helped him get back up. He didn't know it was there. He thought it was a crab pot floating out there. He went around it, ran right into it. Actually, my father-in-law ran into it. He's deceased now. If this is approved, it would change the character and scenic natural beauty of this area. The negative impact on the owner's enjoyment of the natural advantage of their own riparian rights. And it will take value from all of us that live on the water or use the waterways. It will restrict access to the public waters and impact navigation with safety concerns, particularly at night if you can't see it. And yes, boats do go by my house, and it's only about 2 feet of water there too. And I'm closer to the bridge, right at the point. Whoops, excuse me, right at the point. And I've seen it happen too many times. The grasses are vital to the bay, and I spoke a minute ago about the BMPs that we were with in holding back our things with the Chesapeake Bay Act. As part of the responsibility, in my knowledge, that the VMRC manage the water bottoms in a public trust for the citizens of the Commonwealth. I feel we are the Commonwealth facing you today. We are the people. With that being said, I want to thank you all for listening to our side. And like I said, I think we could have many, many more people in Middlesex County and Lancaster County, which is, they use the water, they come to the restaurant, they're allowed to boats go by my house all the time, which I love to see, trust me. And I love oysters. My constituents here today will speak up about other different things. This is just a brief. So now you'll hear the rest of the story. Okay. Thank you very much.
Before you go, any questions, Mr. Fleet? I have one. Okay. You heard staff's alternate recommendation pertaining to moving Phase 1 out offshore. You still opposed to that pilot project?
Yes, sir. because I still just believe once, it's like the solar panel deal was when it came to Middlesex, one started, oh, everybody jumped up and down. There are four going in now.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Who's next, please? Good afternoon now, sir. How are you? Can you state your name, please?
My name is Scott Kaufman. This is going to be a photo finish. I've got a radiation treatment at 115.
Wish you the best of luck.
Thanks.
Yes, sir.
I came to live on Lockley's Creek in the Rappahannock River 41 years ago to design, build, and operate Regent Point Marina, which is on Lockley's Creek. Now, I still live there, even though I sold the business in 2004. The marina and my home are directly across from the Rappahannock Oyster Company. And before I express my concerns, I would like to say that I'm delighted with the success of the Croxtons and the Rappahannock Oyster Company and would encourage their efforts in most cases. However, this isn't one of them. My concerns about this project are focused around its exposure to weather extremes. When I first moved to Virginia in 1976, I was told that I would be enjoying gentle winters and that most people were in shirt sleeves in February. Since then, I've seen creeks freeze, I've seen the Rappahannock River freeze, and I've seen Chesapeake Bay freeze. And I've seen huge pilings and piers dislodged by the ice. Water around the pilings grows at low tide, and as the tide rises, pulls the pilings up. This repeats every tide change. And the debris from all this became scattered along the shores. Worse than ice damage, though, has been the storm damage from the nor'easters and hurricanes. Hurricane Isabel in 2003 was the worst. I'd like to read a few lines from a local paper about the damage that Lockley's Marina suffered, this being the same property that Rappahannock Oyster Company currently owns and operates from. Quote, "When I saw the fuel dock fly through the air, I said, it's time to roll. He said he could not stand on the deck outside his store without holding onto a post. When Masmanian returned the next day, boards, pilings, and assorted debris were everywhere. He lost 65 slips. This proposed project is far more exposed to wind, waves, and floating debris than Lockley's Marina was during Hurricane Isabel. My point being that when the next storm hits, the destruction and debris from thousands of poles and baskets connected by 300-foot lines proposed in this project could be horrific. The recently permitted similar structures of Watts Bay, which is a half-mile by 4-mile inland bay, are in a much more protected area than the location proposed here. And I thank you very much for your consideration of these concerns."
Thank you, Mr. Kaufman. Any questions, gentlemen? Thanks, sir. Again, good.
Liner's tie is sharp.
Oh, thank you.
He always dresses sharp. Makes us all look bad. Good luck, sir.
Thank you.
State your name for the record, please, sir.
Russ Perkinson.
Mr. Perkinson, please proceed.
Good morning, Commissioner and board members. Our family owns land directly adjacent to the proposed permit. We value and enjoy this land in its natural state in many different ways. Has offered many years of pleasure to our family and provided scenery and wildlife habitat for others in the area to enjoy. There's a picture I've shown there looking east towards the Chesapeake Bay from the property. That's very similar view to what the residences in the area would see as well from their properties. We want this to continue. That something like this would ever be proposed in front of our land has been a real eye-opener for us. I'm 60 years old, and I never would have anticipated that something like this might be proposed out there. ROC wants to take something of meaningful value from us and nearby citizens and river users. The values we're talking about here are much more important than the monetary values. The pleasure of using this riparian property, enjoying the view and natural surroundings, being respectful of our neighbors. You've seen some pictures already. I'd like to show you some other pictures. You've seen some pictures taken, I think, from helicopter and that sort of thing.
Mr. Perkinson, you know, we'll have to keep these exhibits for 30 days for the record, okay?
Yes, sir.
All right, sir.
That's fine. I was prepared for that.
Okay.
These are some images off the manufacturer's website that I'm using with the fair use provision of the law. And it shows an example of what these look like or these systems look like. Now, these systems, those bags are often intertidal. They're between high and low tide. And I know the applicant said, or somewhere it was said, their intent was to keep them 2 feet off the bottom. And I think Vim said they should be if it was used anywhere there was any SAV. There's not even 2 feet of water out there on most of this this area. It's very, very shallow depth. A little more about Watts Bay, Scott mentioned, on the eastern shore. It's very different from Ayers area in that it's sheltered. It is high salinity. It's 25 to 30 parts per thousand instead of where we are is about 12. So it's the other thing I've noticed there and is there's some NASA infrastructure in the background there. I would still say it's a scenic, I would live there. It's a scenic area. The people like it there in it, but there is some infrastructure in the background there that we don't have. We're a very scenic area. With that said, I know the people over there are very displeased with these structures that exist now. I'd like to pass out to the board. Okay, you've already passed those out. Let's put up the next one. I took a picture myself over there at Watts Bay just to see what these look like. And the board, the commissioners have a copy of this on front and back side. You have two images up there. So just wanted to see what these look like over there. And that's in the winter with the bags down. You know, they're put, my understanding, they're put down in the winter because the oysters can't take freezing temperatures. So a lot often, according to the manufacturer's website, during the rest of the year, they'd be intertidal, or they would be raised at times, probably for days or longer, to promote drying. This is all about the applicant trying to get extra large profits as opposed to its normal margin. There's nothing wrong with making a buck or making extra large margins, but the extra large profits ROC can capture from off bottom and above waterline aquaculture as compared to standard return on investment it's already receiving from its bottom cages should only be allowed in places where the shoreline owners do not mind. In front of our property, we're not objecting to properly placed bottom cages deployed in rows, you know, provided they don't impact air navigational use of the land. The change from bottom cages to water column and above water aquaculture is offensive to shoreline property owners in our area and to ourselves. I want to talk a little about submerged aquatic vegetation. I've got another. I want to correct, I think, a statement made by staff that the dark green area was less than 40% SAV density, and I actually printed the key here. It shows density 4, which is dense. That's 70 to 100% density of SAV in that darker green area. Staff stated less than 40%. So 70 to 100 is the highest level that VIMS would rate that. There is slightly, you know, further offshore, you see the lighter green, and that is, you know, somewhat less density than the 70 to 100%. So there's a lot of SAV out there. The Commonwealth is regulated entities, and voluntary cooperators, along with other states, are investing billions of dollars to reduce nutrient and sediment loads in the Chesapeake Bay and its tributaries. This particular area the applicant proposes transform historically has had significant SAV coverage before the bay nutrient pollution reached the breaking point. We put some images in our protest letter to show that coverage from some USDA photos. I will state some couple people mentioned, the applicant and one of the other people speaking in favor said there wasn't any SAV out there prior to when this was permitted. Actually, I think if you look at the VIMS imagery, you'll see there was a pretty good amount of SAV, I believe 2008 to 2009, and that was before they were operating in the area. So the other thing I've noticed has been a lot of articles recently in the papers locally in the Bay Journal about SAV beds recovering. And I haven't seen one, I don't believe, that mentioned anything about oysters. What it's all attributed to is mostly nutrient reduction, some sediment reduction as well. But the what attributes these bed recoveries and all these articles I've seen says that nutrient reduction efforts from the Chesapeake Bay TMDL efforts and the efforts by the states to meet that TMDL. So that's what I've seen. It's nutrient pollution that caused the problem with the SAV disappearing. And now this is coming back to the area fairly dramatically. It actually, interestingly, it coincides with the 2017 goals in the watershed implementation plans that the states had to do that EPA required, requiring 60% of the reductions be met by 2017 of the total goal. A lot of those reductions has been agriculture has done a lot. Wastewater treatment plants have done a great deal. They actually were the first to implement the major load of the reductions, or those were the ones that were teed up first because it was more cost-effective to do so. So allowing this type of operation with its detrimental impact on SAV would directly reverse the Commonwealth's well-established policies that are protective of SAV and set a precedent for loss of more SAV. And you already heard the applicant say that they would like the legislature to change the law such that we wouldn't be as protective of SAV. I disagree with that. My work before I retired from the Commonwealth of Virginia, I had a lot of work with the Chesapeake Bay TMDL and working on Virginia's commitment to that. And I can tell you it's a lot of political capital was spent to get those reductions moving and in place. I'm very happy to see, I've been extremely happy to see the same area where I remember seeing the SAV in the 1960s and early 70s, dense. You could float over it with a boat, and you could see crabs running through the grass, and you could scoop them up with a net because you could get to them quicker than they could run as you were drifting across. I saw that disappear, and that's a big reason that motivated me to pursue the career I did. As I saw what had happened, I became convinced that the nutrients were causing a big part of the problem. So I witnessed it, miracle. I didn't think it would happen this quickly. I wondered if it ever would. But because of these reductions, the SAV has come back in a pretty big way. Now, I understand I was here 2 months ago at a commission meeting, saw a presentation by VIMS. I understand we're at 54% of the goal for SAV. So it's been a lot of recovery. But this area is still not anywhere near attainment of meeting where we should be with SAV. Okay, so I've talked a lot about SAV. I want to talk about, which I wasn't planning on doing necessarily, but navigation to and from our property. So
while I'm here, might as well show. I wasn't planning on using this, but
the NOAA depth chart shows that area is 1 foot depths, and I'll that's approximate. You know, it could be areas deeper than that, but I'll tell you it's pretty darn shallow throughout most of that area with it. There's if you're going to hang these things 2 feet off the bottom, and a lot of that area that was in the proposal, they're going to be out of the water a lot of the time in it. So you'd have an even more impact on the SAV with that situation. Okay, we like to use this land. Basically, we like to be able to get to it. The only way to get to it is by boat. There's no highways out there through the salt marsh and islands, so we get there by boat to the front. And what I've shown, it's actually three beaches that we use. We probably use the middle one and the one to the north more than the other one in it. But anybody that's got experience with small boats, keelless boats, small boats you'd have to use to approach this kind of land, lightweight boats, you know that if there's any wind or wave action above about 5 mile an hour wind, you've got to, until you get out to deep water, you've got to go straight into the wind. Whether you're going into the land or you're coming out, you've got to go either straight with the wind and waves or straight out from it, or you can't main control of your boat. And once you get out to deep water, the wavelengths lengthen out a little bit. You know, you can motor up a little bit and get moving better. So we have to approach this area from a number of different ways. And I'll tell you, the bottom, there's 6 rows approximately of bottom cages out there now, and they've caused some, I'd say, more than a minimal impact. But we support the bottom cages because I think they are beneficial for some erosion control efforts. So, and you can go over top cages, you know, if the tide's high and that sort of thing. But what's proposed with these structures, I won't be able to go through them. You know, they're basically connected with 300-foot lines, all the poles. If you use floats, you've got the same problem. So you just won't be able to navigate through it to get their land with what was proposed. So I'll conclude and just closing. ROC has tried to, you know, ram this project through. The VIMS report is insightful, and it states that operations of this type have the potential to generate greater resource and social-based conflicts than traditional bottom culture. Mr. Commissioner and Associate Commissioners, this application is a prime example of a location that has both very significant resource conflicts, that's the SAV primarily and others, and social-based conflicts. It's the worst of both to try this and should not be permitted, Mr. Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Perkins. Any questions, Mr. Perkinson? Thank you, sir. Who's next, please? Good afternoon, sir.
How you doing, Commissioner?
Fine, sir. State your name, please.
Derek Banks.
Mr. Banks.
153 Randolph Street in Toppins, Virginia.
Good to have you here, sir.
Thank you. I just want to set the record straight. Mr. Croxton said he owns some property over in Beverly Beach. Well, that property is not in Beverly Beach, and I want to make that clear for the record. That property is adjacent to Beverly Beach. Back when they submitted their application, it clearly said that they chose this ground to avoid homes and buildable lots. Well, I got a slide to show you that our property is clearly in view of project phase one. And if they move phase one to where you're talking about, it's going to be directly in front of us. These are our homes along the shoreline, and this is the island that he's talking about, the cages along the bottom here now. So if they move them out to the north portion of this photograph, this is my house. I've been looking right there in the window.
Too much for thank you, sir.
Okay.
Yep.
I'll I'd be looking right directly at it. And we see that boats out there all the time using the excuse me, using the cages, and that's our pier. And that little point right there with the salt grass on it, the cages were right behind that little area. So we'll be looking directly at it. I understand that Rappahannock Oyster Company has a lease right around there in front of their restaurant. Why don't they put something in front of their restaurant and let them look at it instead of us looking at it? We don't want to look at it. I oppose strongly. All that oppose on Beverly Beach, all that oppose, can I get you to stand? I got about 27 representatives here, Mr. Chairman, that strongly disagree with the proposal. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, sir. Any questions? Thank you, sir. Who's next, please? Been previously sworn. Would you please state your name for the record?
Rob Perkinson.
Please proceed.
I'll be brief. A lot of things I was going to say have already been covered.
Thank you.
Basically, what it boils down to is they talk about their international aspirations and things like that. I'm okay with people trying to make a dollar, but it doesn't belong here. It doesn't fit with the area. I've been coming here since I was a little boy. I'm 30 years old now. I hope to be able to bring my kids here 30 years from now. I remember the story my dad told me since I was a little boy about the grasses, how important they are and things like that. So I want to see continued development and reaching our goals there. So
thank you, Mr. Perkins. Hello, sir.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sir. State your name for the record, please.
My name is Gary Grab. I'm trustee of Parrot Island Land Trust.
Nice to have you here, Mr. Grab.
And everybody has been said pretty much everything I was going to say, kind of the same thing, but I'm opposed to, first off, I am for aquaculture. I'm very pro that. I have my own little oyster cages at home. I love doing it. I've raised fish and cages and so forth. So I really like the idea. I just don't like the idea of tying up so much of this resource for one entity, using a whole water column on the surface. I don't think that's the right thing to do. I think that the SAVs are very important, and I think we somehow need to learn to work together on this stuff, but I just don't think that that's appropriate, what they're proposing is appropriate in this area at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Grab. Questions? Thank you, sir. Next. State your name for the record, please, sir.
Walter Lawson.
Mr. Lawson, good to have you, sir.
Ladies and gentlemen of the commission, we want to thank you for hearing our concerns today regarding what we consider to be negatives associated with this project if it's allowed to go forward in the area being proposed. And I emphasize in the area proposed. I'm a lifelong resident of Middlesex County, grew up in Lockes Creek in the Rappahannock River. In addition to careers in engineering and real estate, I've been engaged in commercial fishing operations on the Rappahannock River on a part-time basis for 70-plus years. I currently hold a state license for Norse aquaculture operation on Lockless Creek. I own waterfront property in view of the lease for which the proposed project would be installed. Also own bottom leases adjacent to the lease on which the subject project would be installed. Nevertheless, I cannot support installation of the subject project in an area which is in proximity to residential properties, and currently covered with bottom grass. Too many red flags and uncertainties plagued the subject project, especially if considered for the proposed area. Known negatives include the potential impact, adverse impact on bottom grass in the area due to the sheer density of the project structure, which clearly warrants of damage due to shading, initial installation, service in the project, increased navigation hazards for small boaters, compromised water vessels for local waterfront properties, negatively impacting property values and the owner's enjoyment of the waterfront scene, reduction in shallow water areas available to kayakers and canoeists. Also, as has been mentioned, I think it bears mentioning again because it's so important, especially in these shallow waters. Vulnerability to storm damage is a major consideration. As has been mentioned, strong northeasters has caused bottom cages to be ripped loose and deposited on local beaches. Following another Hurricane Isabel, the components of this system being at or above the surface will absolutely no longer be there. This area is wide open. The northeast is all the way from Eastern Shore and up the Rappahannock to the proposed site. The 35,000 cages, 9,000 support stakes, and miles of monofilament line will be deposited in local marshes and on private property in the area and strewn across the bottom of Lockett's Creek. A similar scenario can be expected due to ice damage. We all know what happens to a single stake other than the creek when it's grabbed a hold to by ice. It's jacked out at the bottom with the rise and fall of the tides and carried away with the winds and the tides. So just imagine 9,000 stakes, 35,000 cages in a 10-acre area trapped in heavy ice in a prolonged cold snap. We're hearing a lot of detail today here on the pros and cons of this project for the proposed area. I hope in the midst of all of this that we'll take time to step back and look at the big picture. And the big picture here today is that this project becomes burdened with too many negatives, red flags, and uncertainties when considered for the proposed area. This project should not be allowed in the proposed area, neither in total nor to any degree on a trial or experimental basis. The negative impact on the health of the bay and on private property generated by permitting this project to go forward in the proposed area would be unacceptable. And the people of the Commonwealth, which we represent here today, should not be burdened with this. The applicant has chosen the wrong area for this project. If ever allowed, this type of structure should be permitted only in open waters, remote and essentially out of view to residential properties, and on bottom, both historically and currently devoid of bottom grasses. We appreciate VMRC's role in serving the public interest, in managing and regulating the bay resources, and in guarding the health of the bay. An essential element of that role, we believe, is sort of like the Hippocratic Oath. First, do no harm. No harm to the bay, and no harm to the public's use and enjoyment of the bay. We trust that VMRC will do the right thing for the health of the bay and in the best interest of the public, and not set a precedent for this type of structure in proximity to residential areas on the bottoms either historically or currently covered by the bottom grass. These are public waters, and the public interest should never be sacrificed for the benefit of individual private enterprise. These are public waters, and the public interest should never be sacrificed for the benefit of individual private enterprise. This type of structure should not be permitted in the area being proposed, And again, the applicant has chosen the wrong area for this type of project. Thank you, commissioners, for your service to the Commonwealth, and thank you for hearing us today.
Thank you, Mr. Lawson. Question? Anyone else wish to be heard in opposition? Mr. Powers? Sir, if you, I can't, you want to speak next? I can't see you behind a column, so just get my attention. Thank you.
Hi, my name's Tom Powers. I serve on the Crab Committee, Finfish, and a couple other things, ASMFC and that. My concerns, first off, I live in Pocosin, so, and you'll be talking to people about from about a clam permit later today in Pocosin, and that came about for about the same reason, without this same level of impact to the environment for an aquaculture permit that was applied for several years ago. My main concern with this is boating safety, not for the people that live there. They'll know where this stuff is. But what about Joe Boater, who just got a new boat, and he's out cruising around at sunset or at night, and he runs into a structure that's sitting 2 feet off the water? It cuts his boat in half. He ran into an aquaculture cage, it'd take his prop off, he'd throw his anchor out and call for help. So, I mean, it really, the commission needs to think really long and hard before you do a precedent of allowing this type of gear to be installed in the bay. I'm not saying it can't happen, but you need to think about it. The other thing, if you do permit this type of cage, especially over SAV, you need to think like we did with hall seines. It has to be in water that is a certain depth at mean low water, so they're guaranteed that it doesn't land on the SAV. At low water, it sounds like these cages are going to go right on the grass, and that will kill the grass. So there's that, and let's see. I had lots of other stuff, but people talked a lot more and said better. I would remind the commissioners that staff's recommendation was not go for option moving the thing out here, moving the area one out. Staff's recommendation was to reject the applicant, to deny the application. Their recommendation, if you chose to go against their primary recommendation, was to only allow one area for an experimental area and put it into the outside area. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. Appreciate it. Sir, got you this time. Come on up. Do you state your name for the record, please?
Christopher Brown. I have a piece of property that will overlook this application. I can remember growing up with my dad sitting on the beach there, and had an old Coke bottle there, and he would throw a fishing line out there. I thought, wow, he could get it way out there and have a, it just seemed larger than life. Now, as you look behind me, everybody's got a story. You look at everybody back there. If you look on their faces. Now, what's going to happen if you do that and you have put this here is you're going to take those memories and those stories away. Certainly am grateful for the oysters and doing all this type of stuff, but for one entity to industrialize what all these people and us and what we have doesn't seem right. I think that if you look at what's happens as far as industrialization, they say that this is a beautiful process that I've heard here as the applicant, and I've heard Australia. That's all in the eyes of the beholder. It's a beautiful process when you're lining your coffers with oysters and doing that. But what about the people that are here? The beauty that is in their eyes, that when they look out and they go home, the applicant doesn't go home every day to all these people and what we see. They leave. it's us that has to sit there and look at what they are lining their pockets for. Yes, there's great things that oysters can do, and certainly good aspects to that. But they're already doing that right now. So what I would implore you to do is not continue on the industrialization of one of our great rivers that's out there that doesn't have all that those things that you're going to see everywhere else. So I would just implore you to think about that and think about if this was your house.
Thank you.
Thank you.
State your name for the record.
My name is Jack Hellams, and I live at 123 Pine Top Road. And with me here are several of our directors of our homeowners association who are supporting my comments as well. And it's going to be very hard to follow that act. And at the same time, I'm going to try to respect your all's request not to say things that others have, but just maybe perhaps reemphasize a few things. And I guess at first, the thing that attracted me to this area, because I've lived here now for 17 years, was the beauty of the river. I could see clear to the bay, unobstructed. My children and grandchildren could come and play on the beach and have a great time. And this is what I fear is going to be turned into an industrial site instead. And it bothers me that even if we went to a phased down piece, that in my estimation, when you're looking at 744 pollens, I counted the pollens in my neighborhood, that would be equivalent of almost 15 piers in a very close proximity. And that would be very dangerous to navigation. So I hope you please consider the safety in navigation in that regard. I do think that, again, that when we look at this application, it appears to benefit one entity as opposed to the property owners that live there, as Mr. Brown so wonderfully said. And the grasses, I have no doubt, when you change the lighting, that they will be affected. And I want to emphasize, I lived here when Hurricane Isabel was there, and I personally experienced 17,000 pounds of docking on my property from that. I can't imagine what would happen with this. It's not nearly as heavy. And thank goodness to some of my neighbors, we carried that debris as landowners, property owners, to the dump. I cannot see this organization going all across our area collecting all of the debris that would come from these 700 and some pollens if it was scaled down, or their cages. I just don't see that happening. And I don't believe $5,400 and some dollars would cover their efforts to do that. One other point, location, location, location. When I moved in and I see what the beauty and everything is, and if that's turned into industrial, that to me is going to impact the value of my property. That would normally end my comments, but what I heard this morning also was that there has been much effort put forth into improving the vegetation. And it appears to me if we're going to have pollens, 700 and some, or thousands of them, it's got to impact the bottom at the seabed. And I don't see how you can do that without doing so. There will be a disruption. I also heard we talked about the policies and the possibility of changing those. And we have a policy if there's vegetation that we will not put cages there. Or if there are cages and then we show we will not add new ones. In order to approve this, it appears we've got to change policy. I think that's the wrong way to go. The staff recommended, and I reemphasize, they recommended we disapprove
We do not approve this project as it was presented. And they said, oh, if you do, and they added 11 conditions. That seems like we are not concerning our residents, and we are looking at for the advantage of one entity.
Sir, in all due respect, I think, to your point, those recommendations would have been not just for the one conditional, but would also have been attached to the original permit application as well. So those permit conditions were not made to appease, justify, or any way to support an alternative. They would have been in place regardless of what is approved.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
I understand.
Yes, sir.
But let me do reemphasize, I heard that the staff did not recommend this project as permitted.
That is correct.
And then it appears, I thought I heard them say that, someone here, that when we did, if we approved it, that they would have to have additional space in order for those oysters to be put elsewhere to continue to grow. So I thank you for allowing me to have comments.
Thank you, sir. Anyone else? We are getting well past 12:30. I might see what's going on after this, and I'll ask the commission if they want a break or if they want to continue to hear the matter from a logistics perspective. Proceed, sir. Your name, please.
Joe Fears, Topeka, Virginia. Mr. Commissioner, members of the commission, I appreciate the opportunity to be here to make a comment or two. Now, I have about 2,000 words that I need to say, but if you wish, I can give you a couple of pictures. Would you like to have that?
Picture's worth 1,000. Take two.
And one of these is a Google Earth image of it. There
we go. Thank you, sir.
Just you will see where the bay is in relation to my property. And Sunday afternoon.
Mr. Fears, if you get behind the microphone, because we have to hear it all on record. Thank you.
Sunday afternoon, after it started raining, I took my camera out to take a few pictures. And that's what you see.
Yes, sir.
Okay, let me read something. A trite expression advises folks not to take things personal. But as taught to us by King Solomon in the book of Ecclesiastes, there's a time and place for everything. And so I tell you, I do take this matter personal. My father, up until 1971 at his passing, and I worked on my property for 7 decades, making improvements. It was all done by hand. Now comes a proposal placed around, I thought it was 800, but now I found today is around 9,000 poles and install related equipment for aquaculture. I have nothing against the progress in aquaculture, as long as it does not take blind progress, as long as it does not become blind progress. The proposal disrespects the people of the surrounding environment and the beautiful scenes in the Rappahannock River. It is totally inconsiderate of the surrounding landowners, and the project should not be approved to any degree. The homes and the people who enjoy the beauty of this area came here first. According to what I understand and the examples I have seen, the project would significantly shut off our view of the bay and some of the river. It would definitely have a significant impact on the value of the property. If you see, if you put 9,000 poles up in front of my view of the bay, you won't be able to see it anymore. And that would definitely affect the value of my property. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Anyone else in opposition? Gentlemen, you have five. Are y'all speaking in opposition? Well, if you're going to speak, please rise so I can keep this moving. Is there anyone else that's going to speak in opposition so I'll know?
The lady back there.
Okay. Y'all ready to break? Or do you want to continue on?
Continue.
Sir?
I think continue.
Okay, continue on then.
Just a caveat for the record. Anybody that brought pictures or placards, we have to keep those for 30 days, and then you can get them back.
Yep. Who's next? Commission says continue on. State your name for the record, please.
Janice Brown, and I'm also here to speak on for other women who were unable to attend.
Yes, ma'am. Please proceed.
I had a meeting or a speech attached, but let's cut to the chase. What this is a highly industrialized aquaculture operation, and it's being put into a setting that is not suitable. Lockleys is home to all these people who have scrimped and saved and dreamed about living in a peaceful environment, and to have that kind of an operation will kill that dream and change the character of the area altogether. I really hope that you take this into consideration.
Thank you, ma'am. Who's next? What's your name for the record, please, sir?
Alton Boystow.
See you here, sir.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you this evening. My family has been a property owner in the Beverly Beach subdivision since the 1950s. Not long after it was started by Dr. Tony in the 1940s. Dr. Tony was a biology professor at Virginia Union University. I am currently the treasurer of the Beverly Beach Homeowner Association, consisting of 50-plus association members. Every member, and I say every member, is opposed to this permit for oyster farming. My property is located at 245 Randolph Street, Topping, Virginia. My family built our home in 1965, and I acquired it in 1983. So you can see I have lived in this area over 50 years. That's 50 years. And am not a Johnny-come-lately. Unlike the Rappahannock Oyster Company that I think said they started business in 2001. Over the years, my home has undergone several renovations and currently stands as a 5-bedroom, 2.5-bath, 3,500 plus square feet with a wraparound enclosed screen porch. So you can see it's not a weekend getaway. It's not a cinder block cabin. Our home is used year round. We have great views of the river from every window in the house, with the exception of the bathrooms. If you want to turn the house around, then maybe the bathrooms might see the river. I am a retired electrical engineer, having worked in the telecommunications industry, AT&T, Bell Laboratories. My career has included design of operating systems, electronic hardware, software development, microprocessor, machine control, so on and so forth. I understand telecommunication regulations and electrical code requirements. I share this background to only say my expertise lies in other areas. I am not a waterman. I am not an oyster farmer. By my choice, I do not have exceptional knowledge in these areas, but I'm a quick study, and over the last few months, I have learned more than I care to know. You have heard from a number of concerned individuals who represent just a few of many of us who oppose this permit. Just to summarize, we support oyster production done in a responsible manner. However, this is not the right location for these industrial-type structures. In fact, it might be among the worst locations. One that has presence of submerged grasses, is in close view of our homes,
and properties is in shallow water in an area vulnerable to storm damage. If approved, these structures would change the character of the scenic natural area due to the look of an industrial site on a non-industrial river, negatively impact property owners' enjoyment of the natural advantages of their river property and use of the area. It would take something of significant value from us, our enjoyment. Remember, we are not a Johnny come lately. And in fact, if I look back at property taxes, I have what's considered waterfront property. 2 years ago, my taxes doubled. Restricted access to public waters and impact navigation with safety concerns, especially at night. Damage underwater grasses that are vital to the health of the river and Chesapeake Bay and prevent less dense areas of the grasses from continuing to spread. And finally, it uses a public resource for the financial gain of one entity at the expense of property owners and many others. The river and submerged lands are held in trust for the public interest. We ask that you be good stewards of Virginia and the public interest and to not allow this permit to go forward. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. State your name, please.
My name is Carl Sierra Smith. Most of the important things have already been said, so I'll be very quick. I am Carl Smith, president of the Save the Rappahannock Coalition. We were formed 3 years ago to oppose Dominion's proposal to build large industrial-scale towers across the Rappahannock River, and we succeeded. Normally, I'd be here in support of the proposal. I can speak for most of the members of the coalition and say we support vigorously aquaculture. We support the Croxton brothers' efforts in particular. I've had a lot of fine meals at Marowar, and they should be appreciated for what they do. However, this application forces me to be on the other side this time. And it's because what has been proposed is such a significant departure from past practices. Historically, aquaculture, oyster culture has been out of sight, underwater. Nobody's view was disrupted. There were few significant impacts on navigation, but basically the viewshed was not altered. That's not the case here today. And if this application is approved, there is no question, there is no reasonable argument that this won't open the door to more similar applications coming in, because if this method is so successful in growing such good oysters, and I trust the Croxtons know their science, I'm sure they're right. If it is so good, others are going to follow, and there'll be a flood of applications, and then you will be left to decide how much of our riverbanks, how much of the bay shore will be taken up by this sort of industrial farming activity. Will you stop at 1%? Will you set 5% as a limit, 20? Who's to set that? The problem is the process is not in place to allow you all to make those very difficult decisions. I would argue that you shouldn't be making those decisions at all in the absence of clear guidelines. But you don't have guidelines, you don't have standards, and there are not adequate safeguards to protect folks like these when somebody wants to come out and install an agriculture system out in front of their view. The process is a 19th century process. We're talking about 21st century technology. The process needs to change. You all need a better process than what you have now. It may take regulation. It may take legislation. In the absence of that, I predict what you're going to get is litigation, something nobody really wants. My second point, There is no question that what is being discussed here involves the transfer of an asset from one group to another. That asset has value. Because it has value, it's a form of wealth. We're talking about taking wealth from one group and bestowing it on another. And I thought the gentleman a few speakers ago made a very, very good point, that the waters of the Rappahannock belong to all of the public. They don't belong to one or two individuals. They belong to everybody. And the benefits of a few should never take precedent over the benefits or the values of the many. That's a very dangerous path to go down. Now, when we were here 3 years ago to talk about the towers, you all told us, I don't know how many of you were on the panel, I remember you, sir, and I believe you were here as well, you told us that the concern of the VMRC was below the waterline. Dominion proposed to build towers nearly 200 feet tall. But you made it clear when we opposed that, that your concern was below the waterline. The impact of the application that you're considering today, the impact of your decision, is not what happens. It comes not from what happens below the waterline. It comes entirely from what happens above the waterline. For the most part, when we're talking about viewshed and this transfer of wealth. Do you feel that the VMR has the authority to authorize, to make that transfer of wealth? I would suggest with utmost respect that you don't. And to go down that path would likely lead to a very contentious environment and perhaps a lot of litigation, which you don't want. I encourage you to find a way to work with reasonable people, and I know the Croxton brothers are reasonable people. I encourage you to find a way to work with them to find a system that meets their requirements without taking something from this group. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
Davies, I'm with him, but I'm not nearly as good a speaker. But I have a little bit of a different twist to it. I'm retired and live outside of Urbana, and I'd like to start by saying that I'm really grateful to what you guys have done for Middlesex County, and also to VIMS for what they've done to develop aquaculture. Therefore, I'm directing my comments at your process, not at them. In my mind, you have an opportunity, even more than an opportunity, you have an obligation to change the way this, to improve your transparency and therefore your trust with the public with regard to oyster farming. This isn't your grandfather's oyster business anymore. Permit me to give you an example. As a result of Dominion, our experience with Dominion, I learned to read the public notices in the newspaper really carefully every week, because that's the only way we found out about the towers. So I've continued to do that. I noticed over the last couple of weeks that one of my neighbors, in these little teeny tiny ads, proposed an oyster lease in Robinson's Creek. And then the only other information in there are coordinates. What can I do with that? I mean, I could take the time and Google it and figure out where it was, but that's not really fair to the public. I would assume, I don't know, 6 months ago, a year ago, that they wanted an oyster lease to get oysters off the bottom, if there are any oysters on the bottom of Robinson's Creek. But now I don't know. Because of that, because people would assume they just wanted a regular oyster lease, nobody pays attention, nobody comments, nobody objects, there's no hearing, and you all approve it and it just happens in the shadows without the neighbors or the public knowing about it. The things that we don't know about these kind of applications far outweigh the things that we do know. I talked about the application. All it gives is the name of the applicant, the name of the creek, and some coordinates. You could improve it a little bit by putting in a map or some landmarks or something, and some clue to what they wanted to do with the lease. Once you grant the lease, it says very little, too. It's got the lessor's name and the coordinates, and that's pretty much it. So if my neighbor got the lease that he's asking for, what can he do with it? Can he harvest oysters off the bottom? Can he put cages 2 feet off the bottom? Can he put floating cages on the surface? Or can he build some permanent infrastructure, you know, that'll be there forever? If anything other than what I would have assumed would have been dredging, how would he farm it? Is he going to walk between the rows? Is he going to be in a boat?
Ma'am, I don't mean to cut you off. We're debating the issue of the Rappahannock Oyster Company. You're giving us ideas that probably would be better suited for public comment, which we have a section for, that you can tell us exactly what you think.
It's triggered by this application, respectfully.
Then if you would, please stick to this application, and we'll go from there.
Okay. Then I think that I suggest that the lease that they have granted be clarified. What is it a lease for? The lease grants them the right to do whatever they want to do in that water column, I guess.
Would you like to answer that question, Mr. Stagg?
I think I covered this a little bit in my presentation, but lease only grants the ability to grow oysters on the bottom. We do have a regulation that allows leaseholders to put cages on the bottom as long as they don't extend more than a certain distance above the bottom. Anything else, like this permit application, requires a permit. It's a separate process from the lease. They could have applied for this without a lease. They didn't have to have
right.
a lease here. So, and that's a separate public notice, and that's why we're here today.
Okay, then I will close, but my question is, what criteria will you all use to decide whether or not to grant their
Section 28.2.1205 of the Code of Virginia specifically. Thank you.
All right.
Anybody else in opposition? You have 5 minutes to rebut, gentlemen.
We won't say too much. We appreciate everyone's time. Just a couple of things to mention. Again, when we made the application, VMRC recommended to ask for everything you could ever imagine. So we are willing to acquiesce the size of what we've requested. I know that the phases were listed out. To me, actually, and we haven't talked about this, to me, based on the comments on the Beverly Beach residents, phase three towards further south seems like that's out of use case completely. Would be probably a better option. I do think, as Mr. Stagg indicated, when he went to Alabama, the distance was 1,000 feet or so, three football fields, and the closest proximity to a homeowner where we are. Did you mention the 1,400 feet or so? So I do think it's...
So just to be clear, Perkinson Islands are immediately adjacent. There are no homes there. When I measured this morning, because I knew this question was going to come up, the nearest actual houses are about 1,300 feet to 2,000 to 3,000 feet from these locations, which is, I mean, you'll still be able to see it, but that's about
okay.
We're talking 4 to 7 football field lengths away. I think the visibility would be incredibly minimal. Very similar to when they walk out, look to their left, see docks all down Pine Top, Beverly Beach. There's no difference, but I'd be willing to acquiesce and go even south where they would not be able to. Physically, there's no way they'd be able to even see it with binoculars at that point. I will mention also we harvest year round, 5 days a week. We go out in the ice, Rappahannock ice over quite a bit. This year, we'd be willing to go out and ensure that we are breaking ice daily if necessary. We've got the videos of us breaking ice to get out to our grounds. We and some other farmers we had cages underwater during Isabel. They're too heavy to move. Nothing moves them up. One gentleman mentioned that something came up in his yard. I'm assuming those are floats that some dock owner had. Air cages can't move them. They're a couple thousand pounds, 1,200 pounds. And then finally, I will say I've heard that it benefits one company. It benefits us. Anyone who thinks that oyster farmers are wealthy that have nothing, don't look at our bank accounts and trying to keep people employed, make it work. We work with co-opers across Chesapeake Bay. We can't do it alone to satisfy the markets that are out there. We work with co-opers, as most farmers do, actually, to consolidate. We actually sent you guys a couple write-ups from a few of them that we support. This helps everyone. We're able to actually take market-sized oysters or just under sub-markets and finish them and increase production and volume for everybody. So the last thing, the major concern of being here is my cousin Ryan, who is as heartfelt as they come on not causing waves or doing anything negative towards aesthetics or the environment. So that we have a history, I believe, that's pretty sound of doing things the right way. And I just want to acknowledge that we will continue to do so. I think we try to go above and beyond, and are committed to do that as well. But just wanted to let you guys know we would be open to acquiescing up some of the sizing.
I'll just add, I don't envy your positions. This is a difficult thing. It's something that needs to be discussed and needs to be rationalized. That it comes in the form of one case where it sounds like one person benefits, I regret that it comes that way versus having a policy prior to this. But I think this needs to trigger a discussion about how we do this. It is a shared resource, but it is a resource that that we also share the bounty of, and the bounty is what we're trying to produce. And I think there is a broader conversation about how do we have these things in tandem and how do they work. And it will come with sacrifices on all sides, and we're perfectly willing to accept the sacrifices we need to make. So I leave it to the board to.
Thank you. Any questions by members of the commission for Mr. Croxton? Ms. Everett?
Just specifically to drill down to acquiescing, the black area that was Mr. Stagg showed to be moved, I think, particularly closer to Belvedere Beach, it's, I guess, phase one, but in a different location than you originally proposed. Is that agreeable to you all?
Yeah, it's agreeable. I do think, to Doug's point earlier, if the idea is to do a test case to figure out what its impact is, that's a harder area to read an impact. But at this point, we would like to see what comes of this, yeah. what the testing reveals.
What I read, what I just thought about is down here, this code right here. You can't see that over here. You just can't. We wouldn't have to go out as far. We give this up, and then you're talking about the closest landowners, property owners, house owners. This.
Can come back to the mic if you would, please. Can I get you? Okay. Further questions? Thank you, gentlemen. We've heard some very, very good presentations. At this point, the matter is before the commission for discussion first, then action. Ms. Everett.
Maybe I'm too late for this, but I guess we've heard various things about that, where the black box Mr. Stagg had moved, with blue arrow, about the SAV density there. Is there any way, is it too late to try to get clarification from VIMS at this point about?
Sure, Dr. Orth or Ben, either one, whoever's got it. But we did have, it was some discrepancy, 40% to.
Mr. Stagg, do you have that slide?
Yes, SAV whole area, so if you really want to study a place where it's.
Mr. Bowman.
I saw a guy do that with batter's gloves on last night. You're pretty good at it. Anyway,
yeah, go ahead.
Would it be possible to speak out in reference with that visual up of that the black box that's moved to that corner?
So let me go back to the recommendation, which is at the end here.
Yes.
So, and I apologize to the Croxtons for this being skewed. The best I could do in PowerPoint. I was trying to match this box shape, but anyway, so this was phase one, this is phase two, this is phase three. I think it was less SAV out here. Croxtons are saying, if you really want to improve any of this, and study what the real effect might be on a small scale that they're willing to concede, it sounds like, that they would, I think, look more over in this area where it wouldn't be as visible. Somewhere compressed either left or right of this or this, where its view is less.
Ms. Everett, did I
be over SAV beds where you could study it?
Did I miss your question? Was your question was what is the density of SAV in the area proposed? Was that your question?
Yes, and Mr. Bowman, maybe it helps to show my attention. I guess my concern is not as much view shed and the adjacent homeowners as much as impact on SAV. So where the SAV is the least coverage is of optimal opportunity to me.
State your name for the record, please, sir.
Bob Worth Vims. Now, remembering, that's 2017 coverage, okay? So the area that we were looking at is sparse, you know, like 10 to 40 cover or less. The area that...
When you say the area you're looking at, you mean...
So...
Is there a pointer?
That. So if you look at our... So when we map, we try to map coverage based on the coverage so that most of the area is dense, that is 70 to 100%. The area that is in notation there is much less. There is SAV, but it's sparse. But again, it has been changing over the last few years, as you've heard. You know, not much earlier, a lot now. So the coverage...
Changing in which direction for the record?
All positive.
Thank you.
Yeah. And that's been happening throughout the bay, not just the Rappahannock. So the coverage that you've got in that lighter shade is much less compared to the darker green, which is very dense. The colors are crazy because it changes, but Mr. Perkinson had the map that showed that real dark sliver, which was 70 to 100% cover. And again, the coverages have been changing, so if you go back a few years, you would have seen all density coverage less than at what it is now. And this is happening throughout the Rappahannock. It's not just this area. We're seeing this change throughout the entire lower Rappahannock River at current speed. It's dramatic.
Further question?
No, thank you.
Do you have a further question?
No, thank you.
Mr. Zedrin.
You heard one of the witnesses testify, I believe, the gentleman here with the farm and their best management practices with the setbacks and stuff like that. Do you think that's the reason why this grass is coming back? Is it a nutrient reduction?
The analysis that we've done that was recently published in this prestigious journal strongly suggests that the reasons we're seeing increased SAV is the result of the TMDL's reduced nutrients and sediments coming into the water. Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Further questions of Dr. Orth? Thank you, Bob. Discussion by members of the commission? Ms. Lusk?
First of all, I appreciate the input from everybody here. I think that the Commonwealth of Virginia has shown a pretty vested interest in increasing the number of oysters in our waters. They've shown a vested interest in aquaculture, but on the other hand, there's also been a vested interest in the growth of SAV. In my opinion, the way I see it, this method of oyster growing is an opportunity to see how we can work with these two together. We can potentially grow aquaculture and SAV in line with each other. This is an issue that, you know, we've grappled with a lot, and without any, you know, we don't know for sure whether this type of setup will cause harm to the SAV or even potentially improve it. We do know that some aquaculture structures do improve biodiversity. So I would be inclined to support this application.
All right. Mr. Zedrin?
You know, I think we got to look at the bigger picture here. If we approve this and say it works, say it is beneficial, there's no negative aspect to it,
What we're looking at then is, after that results come back, is back to processing the application for the rest of this. And we're going to have the same problem. We're going to have all these people out here who live in that area and use that waterway. And, you know, one of the speakers I thought was very impressive when he talked about the transfer of wealth. You know, the wealth is spread amongst the people of the Commonwealth. And obviously, with all these people, I don't know how many are here, but I'd say 50 to 100, I guess, people of the Commonwealth that oppose this. They don't oppose aquaculture. They oppose where this location is. And so I see this as a beginning, is if we approve the south side of this and it works, then we're going to be approving it all the way back around to it originally started, and then we're going to be taking away the wealth of the people and transferring it to a company, basically. So for that reason, I would oppose it.
Mr. Tankard?
I would say I'm conflicted on this issue. I hear what you're saying, Mr. Zedrin, and I hear Mrs. Lusk. One thing we do know is that the state seems to be running out of land for people, or bottom land for people, to increase production of oysters and shellfish in general. And SAV is coming back. So when these two things come together, I think it gives us a problem that we see here today. However, I think the system, like Mrs. Lusk mentions, is probably a very good compromise on how to work with both sides of the equation, the SAV and the shellfish. And for that reason, I have a tendency to support this application as well. When we look at 28.2.1205, and you tick off the different considerations, there are a lot of things that that are not a problem when we look at the considerations. Upland use of land is one part of the equation, but we have a bunch of others as well. So I would encourage others to look at 28.2.1205.
Further comments? Dr. Neal?
I'm disagreeing with Tank. We already have a test place. It's Watts Bay. And so we've already got the system being placed, and that's one of the reasons we approve that application, was to give this a try. I struggle every time we lease bottom. Once we lease bottom, you hear the leasee saying, "I own the lease," and the way the regulations are right now, we can't unlease bottom with extreme circumstances. And it creates conflicts. But we have that thing where we say, well, it does not preclude other uses of this water. Crab potters can still go there. I can still go run my gill nets. I can still go fish. I can still water ski. I can still whatever in that area. You can't keep me out of that area. This is taking this area away. There is no other use. I can't go in there and do anything. And so what if we do this, we are taking this section of water away from the public. We just flat are. And I have to have a lot more convincing that the possible benefits of this is worth taking this part of the bay away from the public. Because that's what we're doing. Because you can't use this for anything else. Once you stick this system in here, that part of the bay is gone to anyone else. So I oppose this.
Let me get to Mr. Minor first, and I'll go back to Mr. Ms. Lusk.
Okay. With some concern about the view shed and some concern about the SAVs, I'm concerned about all of it. This area, folks move in this area and raising their children, their grandchildren, generations to come. And I highly encourage you all to work together in the future. This is really, it's really conflicting. But, however, I'm going to oppose this project because I believe there is strength in numbers, and the people have spoken today, and they showed up. So that is where I am. And I also have a problem with debris and pollution. So.
Ms. Loss?
I just wanted to clarify that my support of this project would – I also was – including the special conditions that were listed by staff, and one of those is that the permit would be authorized for a period of 5 years. So while the Croxtons already have the lease, which they have, you know, which is not really unleasable, this particular project, I think, given the conditions, would be for 5 years with an opportunity to reevaluate the project and see how it works afterwards, which adds to my support of the project. I would also note that, you know, aquaculture is also multi-generational, and in order to move forward, we have to be able to be flexible and support innovation as well. So that's why I'm supporting.
Ms. Everett, comment?
Yes, it seems like the commission's very divided on this. I guess my question is, would the commission members consider phase one as the test case and, you know, moving to that northeast corner, as we've seen in the black box, where you can eat the elephant one bite at a time and better understand and do that monitoring, potentially associated BMPs that NOAA and VIMS have identified in their comment letters, where it can be a slower, more iterative process to learn from and have it deliberate conversations before? Does it have to be all or nothing, I guess is my question.
Well, we would only know if a motion is made.
I'd like to propose a motion for...
Can I hold just to see if Mr. Frantz has any comments?
I have concerns here. There's so many user groups involved into this. And denying all these other user groups access to this area really concerns me. Another concern is, you know, what I'm seeing in these pictures. You know, suppose these things start popping, you know, you want them to be successful, but I don't know if I want them to be successful or not. I don't know if I want this all over the state and waterways everywhere.
We heard some discussion today about whether we have policy or whether we don't have policy, and whether it's our right or entitlement to afford property from one entity to another. I think it bears reading into the record the best policy that we have, and as I read this code section, and I read it a number of times before today, that pertains to our duties and responsibilities pertaining to the state-owned bottomlands. It says, when determining whether to grant or deny any permit for the use of state-owned bottomlands, the commission shall be guided in its deliberations by the provisions of Article 11, Section 1 of the Constitution of Virginia. In addition to other factors, the commission shall also consider the public and private benefits of the proposed project, and shall exercise its authority under this section consistent with the public trust doctrine as defined by the common law of the Commonwealth and adopted pursuant to Section 1-200 in order to protect and safeguard the public right to the use and enjoyment of the subaqueous lands of the Commonwealth held in trust by it for the benefit of the people as conferred by the public trust doctrine and the Constitution of Virginia. The commission shall also consider the project's effect on the following: reasonable and permissible use of state waters and state and bottomlands, marine fisheries and resources of the Commonwealth, tidal wetlands, adjacent and nearby properties, water quality, and SAV. I think staff has done an excellent job outlining and taking care of the conditions. I just believe at this juncture there's a lot to be taken consideration in weighing the public versus the private benefits, and I'll leave it at that. The matter is before the commission for consideration. Mr. Minor.
I move that we approve staff recommendations.
There's a motion by Mr. Minor to approve staff recommendations. There's a second. The staff recommendation, Mr. Minor, would be what?
To oppose this project.
Thank you.
Second.
Who was the second? Mr. Zedrin. Further discussion at this juncture. All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
No.
Abstention.
Abstention. You abstain? Ms. Everett abstains. Ms. Lusk?
No.
Mr. Minor?
Aye.
Mr. Neal?
Aye.
Mr. Zedrin?
Aye.
Mr. Tankard?
Nay.
Mr. France?
Aye.
Chair votes yes. Motion to uphold staff recommendations is in place. Thank you very much. Thank you all very much for your presentation. We will return back here at, what time, guys? 2:15? 2 o'clock. 2 o'clock, we'll reconvene.